shall we?
That might be soon. We'll decide if we'll support this. So if you're on the list, I'll bring up the slideshow and put it in presentation mode.
Over
3 minutes.
Well, I gotta figure out how to put this.
This was by me. I don't know if you need that, but it was over here.
I can use the left arm. It was here when I got in.
Love it. You want one?
Good evening, and welcome to the December 12th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board did meet in closed session, and we discussed anticipated litigation, 3 cases. And now we will turn to the consensus on the order of business. Is there a consensus on the order of business? And there is. We're moving on to item number 5.02. Approval of minutes of November 7th, 2017.
I'll move approval of first.
Okay. Thank you, Mark.
11-7. Thanks.
Thank you. We have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And moving on to item number 5.03, approval of minutes of 11-16-17.
I move approval of the minutes of 11-16.
And I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And we get to move on to our student representatives to the board. Good evening.
Hello.
Hello.
So last week, Morobay High School hosted our winter week. So we had a full week full of spirit days. Monday, we had pajama day. Tuesday, ugly sweater day. Wednesday, crazy sock day. Thursday, holiday hat and beanie day. Friday was flannel day. And to end that week, we had our annual winter dance, which we called Snowball 17, which was themed after Stranger Things. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but it was a really good turnout. We were really excited. The kids had fun participating, and it was pretty successful from what I saw. Our Morobay Theater hosted 2 performances last week on Wednesday and Thursday, Check Please and Check Please 2. I was not able to go, but there was a huge turnout, and they wanted to give a special thanks to our new theater teacher, Miss Noelle Eben. The kids really are enjoying her, which is nice to hear. Learn to Knit classes started up again. They are held in the library during lunch. By the librarian hosts them. And then on Monday the 18th, we have our all-school study session for finals. So teachers come in and volunteer, and our ASB students are going to help run it so kids can go in and get help because we do have finals next week, which is really nice that teachers are willing to help out with the kids. For sports news, our girls' water polo has kicked off their season in our new pool, which is really exciting. They've been having a lot of fun, and they've had a couple games, and they're doing really well. Boys' basketball placed first in the Napa tournament that they went to this weekend, and our girls placed third, so that was really exciting to hear. And FFA has placed bins in our school office to take donations for people affected by the Ventura wildfires. So we're working together, and kids can go in and donate blankets and food and clothes. And I actually stopped by today, and they are filled, like overflowing. So that's really good to hear that our school is participating with that. And thank you.
Thank you, Zoe. That is a good cause. And Ratik.
Good evening, everyone. So these past couple weeks and next week leading up to winter break is really full of community-oriented events at SLO High, community and student-related events. Last week, we had a Student of the Month barbecue on Friday, where teachers choose 2 of their students who have outshined. all other students, and they get a free lunch. This is really a time for students to feel like they are recognized when, apart from the Golden Tiger assembly that we have at the end of the year. So this monthly thing makes sure that students know that they're doing well and continue to strive for something that's not just a grade. Zoe talked about the Ventura fires and how the Morro Bay is helping. They also contacted us about helping with the food drive as well. So Cameron Goodwin in the ASB has friends and family who are affected by the Ventura fire. So she brought it up to us that we could start a donation fund at athletic events this past weekend. We had, I think, 5 games this past weekend, and we had jars out for donations that we gave to the United Way of Ventura and the Red Cross of Ventura, and we raised around $300 for them. We strive to continue to help the Ventura fire victims, and we want to help out Morro Bay High School and their drive to see what we can do with clothes as well. Lindsay McLeod, our treasurer, wanted me to mention that this week she and another ASB member are starting something called Random Acts of Kindness. They have a video airing on TNN in the next couple days where students are highlighting students who have committed these random acts of kindness, just encouraging a more positive culture on campus and making sure everyone feels like they're welcome. Next Thursday is our hour-long lunch, which corresponds with another lunch that the staff have. So the ASB decided that since freshmen can't go off campus, we want to create that sense of community that we were talking about and make sure that they have something to do for that entire hour. So we've worked with the cafeteria and have planned another barbecue that the cafeteria will pay for. They've planned a sort of buffet-style meal, I guess, with burgers, macaroni salads, and they'll only charge $3.25 for every single student on campus. And we hope that we can get more students on campus than we usually do on these hour-long lunches. Everyone tends to go off and to in and out or wherever they may go. But our ASB's hope is to encourage students to stay on campus and see what lunch is like with the freshmen and other underclassmen. This Saturday is our coffee night, which, again, highlights a lot of our students on campus. They get to sing, perform, tell jokes, whatever they may want to do, along with a theme provided by our drama department. This year's theme is Barbie. Our drama department always comes up with these interesting themes, and it's really cool to see what they make of them. Between all the acts, they have these skits that they make. So if you have time, at 7 o'clock on Saturday is coffee night in the theater at Slo High. And another thing that the ASB has started putting on is the blood drive, which is on this Friday. We had signups running throughout last week and this week, and on Friday we'll have the blood drive people. I'm not sure what the organization's called, excuse me.
Blood bank.
Blood bank. Thank you. Naturally, that makes sense. But they'll be on campus, and then that'll be running throughout the day, and we have our sign-up sheets filled. We just hope that students turn their permission slips and actually follow through with the process. And regarding sports, a lot of our teams started off undefeated. If I could give a quick shout-out to Mr. Monroe for leading a 5-0 girls basketball team currently. So at previous meetings, I've talked about the correlation between the success of sports and school spirit. Our team's doing well right now. Hopefully, we'll encourage school spirit. So if they keep doing well, our school will be spirited. and hopefully that keeps going. I don't know to say about that. But thank you very much. That's my report.
Thank you very much, Ratik. And Zoe, as always, you're welcome to stay with us throughout the evening. Or if you have work or play that you need to be doing right now, that's fine too. Thank you. And moving on. And moving on to item number 6.02, the audit report. Oh, Ms. Lang.
Hello, good evening.
Good evening.
We have a familiar face with us here tonight. Jonathan Clement is here with Vavrinic Trinan Day. They've completed all of our audits, and he is going to go over those with you tonight. And once again, I want to thank everyone that was involved. They're here for a full week, and it's not that we don't enjoy having them here, but it takes a lot of time. And we had another clean audit. There was one observation at the end regarding our Cal cards, and I just wanted to let you know that we do have an agreement in place that all Cal card holders now must agree and sign and return to us every year. And we've closed any Cal cards that weren't being used, and we're trying to kind of restrict things a little bit on those. And in the interest of time, I told Jonathan that we wouldn't go over the CCSFA audit this year. I think we did last year, but if you have any questions on it, I'm sure he would be happy to answer those. And with that, I'll turn it over to Jonathan.
Thank you, Ms. Lane.
Thank you, Julie. Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening.
President
Good evening.
Of the board, members of the board, management. It's great to be here. As Julie mentioned, I'm here to present both the district and the bond report. I don't have the financing authority in front of me, but I can wing it if you guys want to ask questions. No problem. It'd be great. Love to answer any and all questions. First and foremost, I'd like to thank Julie for all the help, her staff, Ryan and her team, business services. We appreciate everything they do for us. They allow us to do our jobs efficiently and effectively, so we appreciate them. We wouldn't be here without them as well. So I know all of you probably had plenty of time to go through this 99-page audit report, and I hope it was great reading because we enjoy it, and I'd be happy to go through every single page with you, but I will do the shortened version for now, and then we can go back and answer any questions that you may have. So in terms of the audit report, it's very similar to the previous years. As you know, GASB, Governmental Accounting Standards Board, Governmental Accounting Standards Board, we refer to them as GASBs. A few years ago, there was GASB 68, which related to pensions. This year, a new GASB is in effect. However, it doesn't affect you, the district. It's related to other post-employment benefits, and that's inside a trust. So if you put your OPEB, we refer to it as OPEB, if you put it in a trust, it was applicable this year, GASB 74. Next year, we get to treat it like GASB 68, which is the pensions where we bring on that liability. So same, typical in terms of same as GASB 68, same accounting procedures. It's just a different area that we're bringing on to make it consistent. So that's next year, but I did want to point that out. So starting with the, if you just want to start flipping through, we have the management discussion and analysis on pages 5 through 14, I believe. Might be 15. And this is management section. It highlights the report. It goes over this stuff that Julie and Ryan wanted to bring out and point out in the report. And again, it also is kind of a simplistic form of the audit, which we like to go through. And then, if you flip through, starting on pages 20, we have the financial statements. And those that continues on until what I would like to point out on is the notes on page, starting on page 29. And this is notes, disclosures, which reference to those financial statements and all those, and there's other schedules within here. And accounting changes, 36. That was what I was trying to get to. As you can see, these are all the effective accounting changes. Nothing affected the audit report in terms of big numbers, bringing on liabilities like we will be next year. But again, I wanted to point this out on pages 36. So continuing forward, and on my favorite part, if you flip to page 94. My favorite part of the audit report. It's called the Summary of Auditor's Results. And as Julie mentioned, it has an unmodified opinion. And unmodified is the best opinion we can give. It's a clean audit, which we love to give as long as we can. And we issue opinions or we opine over three different areas, the financial statements as a whole, federal awards, and state awards. So, and there are unmodified opinions for all three of those, which is great. We appreciate that. We like seeing those types of audits. And as Julie mentioned, there is a what we call management letter comments on, page 99, the last page of the report. It has to do with the Cal cards. Now, there are great controls in place over the Cal cards. The reason for this comment is the amount of activity. There's just a lot of activity. So, again, we're just bringing it to light. So, again, there's great controls. We have no concerns with the – it was just our recommendation to reduce the activity, just because there's a internal disbursement process that, but again, it's as long as there's controls in place, we are happy. Now, are there any questions? I know that was quick, but are there any questions that you may have or you guys have over the district audit before I go through the bond?
I just have one little question, actually.
Sure.
There's something called the required supplementary information, and your comment was that we do not audit the RSI. And I just wondered why that
is. So the required supplementary information is items that the state or that we're required to put in the audit report. We do audit part of these. The RSI relating to GASB 68 is strictly from the actuarials, which is a use of specialists. So we're taking information from the actuarial studies over PERS and STIRS, at least for these specific schedules. But as for the general fund, we are opining or auditing that, so which that is required. So that first one now, and then also. And then OPEB as well is similar to, it's a use of specialist. So that's other post-employment benefits. We rely on actuarial to report on those numbers.
Thank you very much for that. Yes,
oh, okay. Sorry,
it does help. Thank you.
Great.
Mark Buckman.
Thanks.
Mr. Buckman.
Some people just say Mark. It's okay. It looks like on the management report on page 18, I'm not sure my page numbers are correct anymore.
Sure. Did I short a page when I said through 15?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, it goes through 18. Sorry about that.
It's okay. I'm looking at it, and I'm sorry I can't find it right now. On there, it makes reference to the 10% reserve will only be there for two more years. And I wish I could be more explicit on where it is.
Okay. I will defer.
Thanks, Julie.
I guess I should say at least two more years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
As far as we know.
And that's a guesstimate, or is that because of the Diablo?
That's based on our multi-year projections, which only require us to do 2 years.
Okay.
Two subsequent years.
Great.
So at least two more years, we'll be able to make our 10%.
Awesome. And then there's another question on the reserves, but it's in the SACS report. Can I go there, or,
sure.
Or is that yours?
I think
really?
That'll be part of first interim, right?
Okay. Sorry. You're right.
Okay.
And then just, I think that was the only question I had. I was a little concerned that our reserves were just going to go away. Thanks.
Are there any more questions from the board?
No.
Shall we go on to the Measure D?
Perfect.
Thank you.
And for Measure D, exciting stuff. I'm glad someone mentioned the swimming pool. We definitely saw that on your capital assets this year. It's exciting stuff. Great stuff. Great presentation, by the way. Glad you stuck with the audit, staying here for the audit. It's great stuff. All right, so starting with the Measure D, a little more simplistic compared to the district report. One area, again, we issued a clean opinion on this one as well. But one thing I would like to point out, again, we have financial statements going through not as in-depth as the district, because this is only focusing on the building fund, so also referred to as Fund 21. And so we have the financial statements notes, very similar to the district report. But on we have two separate reports within this audit, and it's the financial side of it, as well as we call it a performance, which is mostly compliance. And that's the area I like to point out. So if we go to, it's page 3 of the performance audit. So I believe you'll have to flip through to the second part of the report. So it will go from 21, and then all of a sudden starts over. And then page 3 of that second report, it goes over the procedures we performed. And I just wanted to let you know, of the $15 million spent, we were required to pick samples based on internal controls as well as compliance, so trying to pick any material items. And we of the total expenditures, we tested 71 transactions, which was just about $8.8 million, was about 56%. Total expenditures. Now, again, sometimes there are two or three transactions that make up the majority of these. In this case, we had quite a few transactions, and we were about to 56% total testing over total expenditures. But again, everything we tested met compliance, and we are very satisfied with all our testing, and again, a clean audit on the bond audit. Are there any questions related to Measure D?
Well, it doesn't get better than that. I did note that you, in your language in your letter, talked about financial statements that are neutral, sufficient, and clear. And I just would like to point out that we have Ms. Lang and Mr. Pinkerton to thank for that.
Definitely.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for your time. Have a
Absolutely.
Good evening.
Thank you. Safe travels. Now we're moving on to item number 6.03 with the Superintendent Student Senate Youth Truth Student Survey. Dr. Park.
As the board knows, we, as part of our local control accountability plan outreach, we created a Superintendent Student Senate. And this is a group of students representing our middle schools and three high schools. I contacted the principals of each of the schools and asked them to provide a representative body of at least 10 to 12 students from their school that represents really the tapestry of their culture. The student body, each representative reflects the collective. And it was no easy task, but they did a remarkably good job. So for the last 2 years, I've been able to meet with the most amazing students. And in doing so, I learned that they're hungry for a voice, they're hungry for relevance, and we've given them both of those things, and we're well on our way to doing so. I found last year a company called youthtruth.org. And Youth Truth is a survey instrument that's funded by the Gates Foundation that is validated across the United States. And this particular survey instrument is designed to empower students to really seek out what is it that they're really thinking about at school in terms of engagement, in terms of safety and connectivity with adults as well as their peers. And we were fortunate enough this year to survey 84% of the middle and high school students in our district. We met as a group, as a student senate group, back in November, and we were fortunate enough to then go through that information from the survey with the director of the program. And so tonight, what I've asked of our student senators, basically I've asked them to come forward tonight and just speak for briefly about three things. What is it that they found that they could acknowledge as a celebration? What did they see that deserved a little concern and some attention? And what are those things that they need to pick up rocks and look underneath? What are those things that they need to investigate? And so 3 minutes each group to come here tonight just to begin that conversation with you, the school board. We will continue working with the student senators throughout the rest of this year. And the goal is that they work with their faculty at their sites, their administrators, and they begin to develop meaningful goals, action plans that they believe, based on that data and that survey information, that they will be able to enact meaningful changes at their schools, not just for themselves, but for their entire student body. So Rutik frequently talks about culture and improving connectivity and inclusivity. This is that opportunity to really begin to create that momentum and that collective buy-in among students. So it's no longer, we're doing this to you. Now there's a chance through the local control accountability plan to actually make changes that they can visualize, see, and buy into. So tonight, what I'd like to do is begin with Los Osos Middle School because they have a concert at the PAC. So, Mr. Illig, will you please bring your students forward?
Good evening, school board. Good evening, Dr. Prater and administration. I'd like to introduce our absolutely wonderful student senators. These are 2 out of 10 of them, and they have really taken a lead over the past few years in presenting ideas and looking towards letting us hear the student voice. So we have Annika Velasquez and Guillermo Salazar.
Hello, my name is Annika, and just to start off, at Los Osos Middle School, 90% of our students participated in the Youth Choose Survey, and our students were really honest, and their voices clearly came through. So one of our key visionary statements of Los Osos Middle School is to be academically excellent, where students are challenged to use their minds, and LOMS also scored lower on the academic rigor scale, which is a little bit disappointing, but almost all of their students reported that they needed to work harder in their classes to get good grades, but only about half the students stated that their teachers explained in a way that they understood and gave them assignments that really helped them learn. In terms of academic rigor, the students are strongly asking for more challenging activities that really make the students think.
So, hi, my name is Alexis, and I'm a second visionary for the statement for Los Osos Middle School is to be developmentally responsive to the unique challenges of early adolescence. This includes student engagement. A majority of students state that they enjoy coming to school and take pride in their work, but there is a perceived disconnect with classwork in relation to usefulness outside of school. To summarize this part, LOM students enjoy coming to school. They are eager to learn and take pride in their schoolwork. However, they seek academic excellence through their challenging and in-depth academic demands, which need to be balanced by engaging the students with real-world connections.
We also strive to be a school that provides a socially equitable educational experience for all of our students. Students are much more positive in this regard and rated positive relationships with their teachers and very positive relationships with their peers. School culture is a factor that is rated the highest. Responses within this area show a sense of belonging with their peer groups as well as their peer teacher group. Although 32% of students reported a perceived indecence of bullying or harassment, 85% felt a strong sense of belonging among peers and or teachers.
In summary, students feel a strong connection to Los Osos Middle School. They enjoy coming to school and take pride of the schoolwork. They are asking for more academic rigor as well as real world connections.
Thank you so much for having us here.
Excellent. Thank you.
Mr. Calandro, Laguna Middle School principal.
I'm going to let my guys introduce themselves because they practice this. They're good at it.
Hello, I'm Morgan Mosichuk, an eighth grader from Laguna Middle School.
And I'm Elliot Chappell, a seventh grader at Laguna Middle School.
In looking over all our Youth Truth data, we were excited with many things we learned. Among the items we feel worth for celebrating was the high level of involvement of our students. Many students cited the increase of sports available, with wrestling and soccer being added last year. Also, the increase of after-school clubs has been great. Another data point we're celebrating is that 3/4 of our students reported that they are accepted by other students. This is much higher than comparison in other schools, and that is great. Another celebration is the very high data point in regards to our teachers and our discipline policy. Our highest level response was regarding our teachers believing in us and our success. It is fantastic that our teachers support us in this way. Also ranking very high was that our teachers expect us to explain our thinking. Lastly, our school's data regarding the fairness of our school's discipline was very high. In summary, we celebrate our level of involvement, our high percentage of students that feel accepted by their classmates, our teachers believe in us, our teachers demand that we explain our answers, and the fairness of our school's discipline. Also, for areas of possible improvement, there are three areas. One is simple. Our students want more lunchtime activities, and we like them, and we want to have more of them. Next is about how we treat each other. Bullying, mainly verbally, it was definitely seen in the data. We mentioned earlier that we celebrate the high level of acceptance most of our students feel, but we see the concerning data on bullying too. The data revealed that most common occurrences were verbal, and much of this was due to differences such as race or gender. This issue was how we treat and speak to each other, and this is very important.
Lastly, there were several data points regarding our learning that should be addressed. There were three specific questions on the survey. What we learn, quote, what we learn in class helps us outside of school. We learn a lot every day in most of our classes, and the teachers give us assignments that really help us learn. All of these had lower scores. So to summarize, our areas of possible improvement are increasing lunchtime activities, treating and speaking to each other more respectfully, and being sure that what we are learning translates to the real world and that we learn a lot every day. Now I would like to share our next steps. For lunchtime activities, we are going to work as a school to find ways to have more. In regards to how we speak and treat each other, we are spending time every morning with a focus on treating each other with respect. The principal and assistant principal lead the school every morning on the announcements in this effort. The theme has been, quote, take care of yourself, take care of each other, and take care of this place. The focus on this topic started the day we returned from Thanksgiving break and will continue on until we leave to winter break. In regards to the student data about our learning, we plan to work with the entire teaching staff to dig deeper and work on this issue. Thank you for your time and the opportunity to share what we learned on our survey.
Yes.
Mr. Dowler, Pacific Beach High School.
We might have to raise the mic. So, Eric asked us to do it in under 3 minutes, and I'd like to point out that we will clock in far less than 3 minutes. I have Jesse Saldana and Eric Robbins here to present our Youth Truth data.
I'm Jesse Saldana. This is Eric. And I guess we'll just get straight to the point. We're here to talk about what we reviewed on the survey, and it was about like 80-something. Yeah, I forget. 80-something percent that took the survey over at our school, and we learned a lot from it. Our strengths and our weaknesses, more importantly, but I'll just talk about our strengths first. Well, something I'd like to point out is something that me and my students, not my students, my peers are very proud of. We rank higher in every single topic of this survey than the rest of the slow thing. Just like to point that out, you know. And then some of the national things, too. That's a good thing, too. One of the most topics we ranked higher was teacher relationships, and I think it's because it's so few teachers that are teaching us, and we really learn to connect on a personal level with them sometimes, and we really engage in what they teach us. Another thing we were really proud of was how high we ranked in school, the school climate, the culture. We're all really proud of what we do there and how we do the things, and the school size means, like, everything with that, really, the reason why we work so well together is because we all like a family there. And it's really positive staff, and they're all just like a big family. And Eric can talk about the weaknesses.
Like I said, like he said, I'll be talking about the weaknesses. And although these are our two lowest things in the survey, they are the highest in the San Luis School District. So I'm somewhat proud of that. All right. One of them is the student engagement. And so we're doing our best to try to get students more involved with each other, which, like you said, is a big family. It is. You know, every family has some little problems, and we're looking to fix them. And our second weakness is academic rigor and how challenging it can be. And we're doing that. We're looking into project-based classes and just, you know, some students learn faster than the others. So we're going to do our best to fix that.
Talk about the sets. Concerning academic rigor, we find it really hard to solve this type of problem because we have such a like range of people that learn differently at the school because they all come for different reasons. And it's really hard to have a group of like 20 kids in the same room that range from really smart kids to some people that have to take math really slowly. So it could be really hard to find some way to teach that. And one of the things that our students at our little student senate group talked about was project-based learning, which we really all like to, you know, learn more about and, try to get it more into our classes because we really like doing projects there. And we've been talking about a lot of the – sometimes the credits that we get there don't feel like they're worth for the work that we do. So we'd like to look more into that in the next month to come, see how we could change it and make it feel like you're actually getting the worth of work you do for it. And so we plan to discuss more of this in January in the Student Senate meetings and stuff and try to be leaders in our school to teach, help kids, and get them more engaged in classes.
Yep.
Well done, you guys.
Mr. Alstott, Morro Bay High, and I understand you have a brilliant speaker up here. I think I saw him last night on in the audience.
Yeah, I mean, their introduction is actually part of their speech as well, so I'll leave the mic up here since he's taller than me.
Okay. Hi, I'm Scout Beidelman.
And I'm Hiram Burris, and we are two of the 10 student senators from Morro Bay High School, and we're here to talk to you, like the other groups, about our Youth Truth survey results.
So we really wanted to make the most of this opportunity giving the survey to our students, and we wanted to get the most accurate data. One way we decided to do that was to individually go into each English classroom and talk to the students before they took the survey about the importance of being honest and how what they say really will be looked at and will make a difference. And then our next step after having our students take the survey, we noticed we got an 89% response rate, so we were really pleased because we know we were hearing from a lot of them. We just then met back with the Student Senate to get a very preliminary review of the data.
And there is a lot of data in these Youth Truth surveys, so what we're going over right now is a very preliminary result, just the surface level findings. So one of the areas for growth that we saw in our survey was college and career readiness. Some students at Morro Bay High School feel like they aren't prepared for some college classes and that they need some more assistance from the high school to help them find careers that match their interests.
But we did see an area of strength for us was our peer-to-peer relations. Students shared on average that they felt like their peers were very friendly to them. They enjoyed working with others in projects and classes, and they really felt like they could be themselves.
And then as far as our next steps, like I alluded to earlier, we're really excited to dive into all this information and figure out how we can make Morro Bay High School an even better place.
And as Hazem was saying, since there's so much data, we want to create a readable document that we can share that kind of condenses and summarizes the information, because there are a lot of numbers and stats that can be kind of confusing if you don't understand the context of the survey. And we'd really like to share the information with students, staff, and parents so they understand what was said and what we're going to be doing, and they can see how we're involved and they're being involved in this.
And we appreciate Dr. Prater for involving us at some level in making these decisions so students can see that they are contributing actual change to their own school.
Yeah, because we're really realizing this isn't just for our school and our district, it's for students to see how they can contribute to making a difference all around.
Thank you for having us.
What was your participation rate, Morro Bay High School?
89%.
Excellent. Thank you.
And the last presentation is from San Luis Obispo High School, Mr. O'Connor.
Good evening. I'll introduce our students. We have Greta Carlson and Ratik Shinlat, and they're going to tell you all about our survey data.
So, we have a slide because we weren't sure how to present this.
There it is.
Visual is the way to go for us.
All right, take it away.
Oh, so, sorry. Hi, everyone. My name is Ratik. You want to introduce yourself, Greta?
Oh, I'm Greta Carlson. I'm a senior at SLO High, along with Ratik.
So, when we were sitting back at after when you first got, we're looking for ways to administer the survey, we thought, Will Compton came up with the idea of make it mandatory. That eliminates non-response bias. So we had a mandatory survey given to all students in their math classes. Now, unfortunately, students in pre-calculus or in math EAP were not able to take the survey, so our response rate was 81%. Fortunately, we have 1,500 students at the school, and 1,200 students responding to the survey is enough to make a conclusion about our findings. Just a disclaimer, we apologize for the number of statistics or the numbers that are in this presentation. We found that the easiest way for us to show you the data was to show you the numbers itself.
So we broke down this slide into four different positives that we found, and then four areas that needed improvement, essentially. And two of the most strongest areas of strength that we found at SoHi was that students and teachers have been have cultivated extremely strong relationships with each other, and teachers are also found to have, be very knowledgeable of the subjects that are teaching. These two strengths essentially go hand in hand, as students can trust their teachers to present them with adequate knowledge for them, for not only the class, but also to enrich their learning.
Now, students at SoHi feel like they're being challenged, and that the competitive nature of SoHi has always been there. We felt it since freshman year. So 83% of students reported that they tried to do their best in school. Because SoHi is as competitive as it is, students feel the need, it may be from peer pressure, to do the best they can to up their peers, maybe. But they also believe that adults at SoHi treat the students with respect. That whole staff factor of the staff being amazing on campus is something that we really wanted to highlight in this presentation. We believe that our staff evidently is doing an amazing job respecting students and knowing what they're teaching.
As for areas of improvement, we also found that the students felt that their college and career readiness, whether it be skills, how to simply live in as an adult, or to prepare for college or find interests that they want to pursue for their careers, was not as strong as we had hoped for, and so that would be something in the future that we are looking to strengthen. Along with this, we find that students and teachers essentially are assigning a lot of not necessarily pertinent or meaningful work, as students have said, and this could be addressed, especially as we want students to be able to think and learn, not only just to get a grade, but to fully understand the concepts.
Student involvement and academic aid were also another really daunting factor that we thought were areas for improvement. When only 44% of our students believe that they feel like a part of the community, that's something not only the school has to look at, but myself as an ASB member should also look at. But as far as academic aid goes, 16% of students felt that they had one-on-one tutoring available to them. And if you go to the next slide, there's some more stats on that. On the far top right, we'll see that this isn't just at SoHi. It's a district-wide thing where students don't really know how to get help. Only 11% know how to study. Only 9% believe that they have after-school makeup classes. This academic aid is something that certainly should be addressed not only at SoHi, but district-wide, as these stats show. Now, as I mentioned earlier, SoHi is a competitive campus, and if you look at that bottom picture, students believe that 68% of students believe that their extracurricular commitments are an obstacle to learn. Now, this kind of relates to the relevancy factor in the busy work, because while students may put that upon themselves, it's also up to teachers to be self-aware of the fact that students are committed outside of school, and assigning this busy work does not really help them learn, nor does it help them balance their extracurriculars with their schoolwork.
And as SoHi has kind of traditionally found, we push students not only in academic areas, but in athletic areas and also outside of the classrooms, and encourage students to get involved in their high school career. So balancing this finding is extremely important. So thank you for your time, and we are appreciative that we've been able to participate in this survey.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Well done. I would just like to give some kudos to Dr. Prater for it's just like a whole different universe to hearing from the students this year who use the Youth Truth program, as opposed to in the past we've tried to gather this information. It was a little more random, I guess, or skewed because it was who you knew and you could hand them the survey. And you brought that to us, and I thank you for that.
Well, it was a group effort. I have an incredible team, and the culture of our district is moving more and more
towards, I think, an enlightened one, where you cannot really become an excellent school district unless you have the students helping drive that decision. And they're buying in. This is the beginning. You just wait. This just happened this fall. So you could imagine 2, 3, 4 years from now how refined our student awareness, body's awareness will become as to how their level of expectation in the classroom, their level of social responsibility will elevate as a result of this. So I look forward to where it's going.
Definitely gives them a voice. Thank you very much. Any, Ellen?
So I just wanted to comment that I think something that I find exciting about this is it's not just an exercise, a one-time exercise, that we're going to use this as a jumping-off point to continue to take all this into consideration, all the hard work that the students have done and their comments and their honesty, that we will it's helping us create a path forward for ourselves and for the board and administration, the district, and I really appreciate the information.
Thank you, Mrs. Sheffer. And we're now moving on to item number 6.04, which is the superintendent's Blue Ribbon Committee report.
Well, I greatly appreciate your patience. Last April, May, I embarked on a begging journey, trying to ask very busy, talented, successful people to join me on a committee or join a committee without me and really help frame for us a fresh look at how we might approach the pending closure of Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant and the resulting loss in tax revenue. We knew this was coming. We didn't know quite exactly how it was going to roll out. We're learning more by the minute. I asked a group of community leaders to come join me in helping put this together. We called it the Superintendent's Blue Ribbon Committee. And I just can't really say enough about the work they've done, the sacrifices they've made to give up their evenings, their private time, and take on a very unpopular task. And so in order to make this happen, there needed to be a level of distance from me and the committee. So I tapped on the shoulder of our former director of BG&T, who I came to really appreciate and respect, Anthony Palazzo. And I tapped on his shoulder, and he said, I think his words were, uh-oh, what do you need? And I said, well, I need a favor. And so I tapped on his shoulder to help facilitate this committee as well. And he did so, and he did that with professionalism and great humor. And I appreciate that. Tonight, we have representatives from the committee coming here to speak to you. And I would like to hand that off. I have a few words I'd like to share at the end as well. But let's get on with this report. Thank you very much.
Hello. Good evening. My name is Melissa James, and I am a member of the committee. My day job is I'm the Director of Economic Initiatives and Regional Advocacy for the San Luis Obispo Chamber of Commerce. But I also have two young daughters, one who just started kindergarten. So I think that makes my two girls graduates of the district in, I think, 2030 and 2032. So we'll be around well beyond the closure of Diablo Canyon, so we care a great deal about the future of the school district. So there's five of us here from the committee that are going to share a little bit about the things that we discussed and the things that we're bringing forward for you to consider. And I'm going to kind of provide a little bit of an overview about kind of who we are, what the process was, how we arrived at some of these recommendations. So this is the group of 10 individuals that were on the committee. Like Dr. Prater said, we were all volunteers. We are a cross-section of the community. There's several that do have an education background. There's many, if not all, of the committee members have some sort of a personal connection to the district, whether they were a graduate of the district, have kids or grandkids. kids in the district, so we all have a vested interest and care a great deal about the future of the school district. So a little bit about our committee's purpose, to make sure that we all have understanding about what it was we were doing locked in a room for so many hours. We were asked by Dr. Prater to come together and to conduct an independent assessment of the Diablo Canyon impacts. There's no arguing that there's going to be great impacts community-wide to the counties, to the cities, to the school district. It's going to be a large community impact, but the school district is positioned to receive a great deal of that impact. And that impact comes in the form of an $8 million annual loss. And so we were coming together to consider that loss to the district and to make some recommendations about what the district can do to address it. And what we were charged with as we walked into these meetings was to keep the present and future success of our students at the forefront. And that really was the context in which we listened to and looked through all of the information. The committee process. This gives you a little bit of insight as you have a report in front of you now and you're going to be reading through it. Well, how did you get to this information? Well, we had about 10 meetings, and they were all 3 hours each in the evenings, and we had a lot of discretion to kind of go wherever we wanted to go as far as looking at different data or talking to individuals within the district. And we really came into it wanting to understand both kind of the financial and programmatic impacts that the district was facing, but we also wanted to understand the human impacts, because there's a lot of fear and concern from a lot of different folks, from teachers to staff to students to parents, about what this means. We wanted to understand that context as well. And so in order to do that, we invited in a variety of individuals. We had administrators, we had principals, we had union representatives, teachers, we had staff, we had folks were talking a little bit about curriculum and what impacts would be made in the classroom. So we tried to really look at it from a lot of different dimensions. So the scope of the challenge, this is the thing that we have to talk a little bit about, understanding what it means to the district. Obviously, I shared that there's the $8 million annual loss to the budget, which is about 10% of the district's operating budget, so it's significant. That's equivalent to 100 teaching positions, and it represents about $1,700 in funding per student per year, which is no small thing. And as we started digging into the information and looking at the budget, it became very clear very quickly that the major driver in the budget is people, with 85% of the budget being in wages and benefits. And about 95% of that is stipulated via collective bargaining. So it's not, there's a lot of complications as you start looking at how are we going to fix this. This kind of just demonstrates that the same kind of general scope of the challenge, just visually, to kind of see the large amount of the budget driver that is related to people. But to put a finer point on the scope of the challenge, that was the challenge that we knew on day one coming into it. Okay, $8 million of annual losses. But as time went on, we started these meetings, I should have said, back in April. And here we are in December. There's a lot that's kind of transpired over that time. So one key event that you're probably all aware of that took place, which is a significant impact further exacerbating this budget challenge, is the $36 million in previously negotiated settlement money within the California Public Utilities Commission that was, for better purposes, struck down by the administrative law judge. And what that does in the short term is it makes the impacts felt a lot sooner. So with that $36 million in funding that we had hoped was coming to the district, there was $10 million that was set aside for an education foundation, and another 20-plus million that was going to be keeping the revenue stable until 2024, 2025. Without that, the revenues are going to start decreasing now and slowly be decreasing over time until 2024, 2025, when the $8 million is completely gone. So it's a significant impact to the budget in the short term. Another impact to the budget that's separate from the Diablo closure is the increasing costs of healthcare. So as you're seeing reduced revenues coming in, there's also an area in the budget where there's going to be increased expenditures. And by within the same time frame, up to 2025, it will be increasing from $7.1 million to $10.5 million, which, as you're looking at a budget issue, it's definitely something that has to be kind of considered in the conversation. So as I turn it over to some of my colleagues on the committee who kind of start to share through the nuts and bolts of what we're presenting, I wanted to leave you with an analogy that we kind of put together, and you'll see it in the report as well. But it's an important kind of framework in which we approached this challenge and the way that we're bringing forward these recommendations to you. And that analogy is simply likened to somebody coming into a doctor's office with a complicated illness. And the doctor would say to that person, the good news is it's not fatal. There is a variety of treatment options. There's a lot of different things that you can consider. The bad news is that every treatment option is going to have some pain. It's going to have some lifestyle changes. There's going to be impacts to each of these treatment options. So now I'm going to walk you through those treatment options, share with you the different side effects that they each have, and then you're going to have a decision to make about which treatment option you want to pursue. So I share that because that's the context in which I want you to be thinking about the recommendations that we're bringing forward. We're bringing forward a lot of different options that you can pursue, that you can look at, but not all of them have to happen. But we do believe all of them have to be considered. And then a deeper discussion with community stakeholders needs to take place so that we can arrive at, so that you're able to arrive at conclusions or decisions that have the least amount of impact to students as possible. So with that, I'm going to pass it over to Kevin, who's going to share a little bit more.
Good evening. Kevin Buman, proud parent of two San Luis High students, and honored to serve on this committee and help this district work through this very complicated situation. Thank you to Dr. Prater and all of you for what you do every day for our children. It's very well appreciated. So as Melissa said, we were given a great deal of information, all that was requested and then some. The sorting through it all, we spent significant amount of time. We arrived at our recommendations after considerable reflection and always trying to keep in mind the district's most important stakeholders, the students. We recognize these hard truths, that the budget gap is significant. It's going to take at least 10% of the current annual operating budget. There's no easy solutions here. Absent new revenues, significant cuts in spending will be identified after careful consideration and then implemented by this board. Obviously, implementation will be painful, especially in light of our community's enormous pride in our schools and our students. Our teachers do a great job. We graduate students well prepared to grow and mature and become productive citizens. The budget gap must be addressed with urgency, especially considering the fact that we might not get the $36 million in mitigation funds previously considered, and the very real possibility that Diablo could close years ahead of schedule. While the school board has the ultimate responsibility and authority to decide how to close this budget gap, we strongly urge a collective, solutions-based approach. Toward that goal, we offer several thoughts for this board. That the school board and administrators strive to maintain frequent communication with the entire San Luis Obispo community, San Luis coastal community. We suggest, for example, that you create multiple forums for the purpose of candid, robust, and constructive discussions with all stakeholders. We fear there will be a tendency for stakeholders to want to push this problem away, wish it away. It's something we'll deal with later. But we know that if they are armed with the facts, they will offer constructive ideas and be much more likely to buy into unappetizing but necessary expense cuts. We know that all stakeholders, will worry first and foremost about their own interests. I don't want my school closed. I don't want to lose my job. Perfectly understandable. But we hope that in addition to that, all stakeholders will look at the larger picture and engage in a good faith effort to identify potential solutions. It's hugely important that everyone fully share the responsibility for finding ways to minimize any negative impacts on current and future students. This is also important because if stakeholders decline to engage constructively, the board could be forced to act unilaterally to close the budget gap. And the board's only tools are very blunt ones: layoffs, school closures, etc. Both may be necessary, but we believe it's possible to close this gap without resorting to massive across-the-board layoffs. We urge the district set an aggressive timeline for identifying and implementing measures to close the gap in order to manage a premature closing of Diablo. Ideally, the district would have all remedies identified and ready for full implementation within the next three fiscal years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Newman.
I did graduate from San Luis High School just a few years ago, and I'm very proud of the young people who spoke to you tonight, and I know you must be just really wonderful. I can't remember being that bright, but I'm sure I was. I expect to be relatively brief because, unfortunately, there just aren't many ways to enhance revenue, especially on the order of the magnitude needed to fill an annual hole in the budget of $8 million. We'll start with the offers, the biggest potential payoff, but it also requires the district to clear a very high hurdle, passage of a parcel tax. A parcel tax of a modest amount, say $80 a year, and really many families in the district spend that much and more on a single night out at a modestly priced restaurant. But $80 parcel tax would generate $3 million annually. However, it would require a two-thirds vote for approval. Approval would be possible, but only if all stakeholders, parents, teachers, staff, and unions, put on a determined and high-spirited campaign. The recent bond measure required only a simple majority. We recommend that the district hire a consultant to explore the feasibility of gaining voter approval and then consider whether to put the question to voters. We need that Measure D, the district's recent bond measure for upgrading facilities, passed with a 72% of voter approval. Other revenue enhancements include selling, renting, or developing surplus property. We recommend the district compile a complete inventory of current unused sites and prospective surplus sites, then assess the different ways they could be used in support of the district's programs. This might also require a specialized consultant to help assess this, but the idea is to determine the highest and best uses of surplus property to estimate values and potential revenue streams. Surplus sites could be rented out, possibly generating $200,000 or more annually. Sales of other sites could generate $3 million to $5 million each. As a possible approach, surplus property could generate revenue from rental income for employee housing of some kind, similar to Cal Poly's Bella Montana project. Such a project could be beneficial not only to the teachers, but also to the entire district. We want to be clear that we believe any one-time revenue generated from selling surplus property should be deposited in an endowment or capital improvement fund and should not be spent on annual operating costs. We also urge the district to create permanent endowment as other districts have done. The district's tentative mitigation agreement with PG&E includes a $10 million contribution to an educational foundation. A foundation with a permanent endowment would present the district with a large long-term benefit. Conservatively invested, even a relatively small endowment of $10 million could generate up to $400,000 a year to support educational programs. Regardless of the mitigation agreement's ultimate disposition, the district should seek to establish an endowment as a revenue mechanism to enhance school programs. And on a final note, we urge the district to explore ways to engage the private sector and perhaps identify public-private partnerships that could bring in revenue from the private sector in support of specialized programs. It says for on a final note, but that's not going to be my final note. On the other, on the matter of inter-district student transfers, currently the district educates more than 160 students from other districts, shouldering the burden of those educational costs without receiving additional revenue. A fair restructuring of the inter-district transfer agreements could generate an estimated $400,000 annually. We also urge the district to create a permanent endowment, as other districts have done. The district's tentative mitigation agreement with PG&E includes a $10 million contribution to an educational foundation. A foundation with a permanent endowment would present the district with a large long-term benefit. Conservatively invested, even a relatively small endowment of $10 million could generate up to $400,000 a year to support educational programs. Regardless of the mitigation agreement's ultimate disposition, the district should seek to establish an endowment as a revenue mechanism to enhance school programs. Another way to fund an endowment would be to take the proceeds of any surplus property when it's sold and put it into a permanent endowment. Just as we seek wellness in health care, revenue enhancement will do much to create wellness for our district's budget in the years to come. Thank you.
Thank you.
Really short. Good evening. My name is Bob Wacker. I'm the senior partner of Wacker Wealth Partners. This is SLO County's largest independent financial planning and investment management firm. And more importantly, I'm the father of two great grown children who each spent their whole formative years in San Luis Coastal Unified School District. So, and they're doing great. And I apparently was voted the least popular committee member because I get the least popular stuff to go over tonight, and that's cost containment. So I'll be starting from the painful, and then I'll be moving to the really painful. So be sure to keep up. A quick refresher for the audience and the board on the tough math that's facing the district. 85% of the budget now goes to pay people. The hole in the budget is going to be approximately 10% of the current budget. The math is this. You simply cannot close the gap without reducing the size of the payroll. That's the hard truth, but we hope you can avoid across-the-board layoffs. That's a crude way to make cuts and a very demoralizing way to make cuts. That said, I admit right up front, we have no fun way to make cuts. We'd start, though, by utilizing voluntary attrition, taking advantage of retirements and other voluntary departures to reduce staff. Then we'd want to make sure the district considers the feasibility of an early retirement program. Well-conceived early retirement plans can save money, protect newer teachers, and provide retirement incentives for senior teachers. But after careful review, and based on an independent analysis done by a consulting firm that specializes in this, the committee did not see a benefit at this time in an early retirement program. In the short term, it would be unlikely to achieve useful savings, and on top of that, it could provoke an unintended shortage of teachers in certain difficult-to-fill subject areas. The committee, though, does recommend evaluating this annually as a potential savings over the longer term. So that brings us to some more difficult options. Increased class size, which in theory and on a spreadsheet could save the district approximately $3 million annually and could also enable the district to retain the current breadth and depth of curriculum. Teachers and parents will understandably be concerned by suggestions to increase class size. We all know smaller is better. Nonetheless, in the spirit of our conviction that everything must be on the table, we note that current class sizes are below the county average, and an increase could realize significant savings. The district currently staffs its classrooms at an average of approximately 25 students per teacher, a little lower in K through 3, a little higher in 9 through 12. Now, these numbers are based on average class size. Individual class maximums can and do exceed the class average, which is negotiated within the contract as well. These average class sizes are below the maximum averages of 28 students per teacher for grades K through 3 and 32 students per teacher for grades 4 through 12 set forth in negotiated contract agreements. An increase to the contract maximum could save the district approximately $2.5 million annually and could also enable the district, again, to retain its current breadth and depth of curriculum. Our report notes several other variables that could make this a little more palatable, but we understand how uncomfortable this idea is for everybody. We do. And while I'm playing the Christmas Grinch, let's forge ahead to the delicate subject of school closures. The committee would be remiss if it didn't acknowledge that the district has underutilized facilities. The district has smaller enrollments in its neighborhood elementary schools compared to most other districts. A school closure is a painful option and should be considered with care. As a dad of two kids who spent some great formative years at Sunnyside just down the block from our house, I know that. Nonetheless, it's conceivable that a school closing could yield savings for a relatively small trade-off given all the other factors. A factual analysis and discussion should occur about the merits, deficits, and adjustments involved in closing a school. It's conceivable that a school closure could save $500,000 annually and possibly enable expansion of other programs. Although a school closure could generate substantial savings for the district, the community impact of such a decision must also be considered carefully, and we know you will do that. Another difficult option, employee compensation, wages, and benefits. With 85% of the district's budget spent on wages and benefits, no scenario can avoid addressing the components of this key budget driver. Here we see two areas for the district to consider. First is healthcare costs. We strongly encourage you to work with employee groups and them, of course, to work with you to phase in a cap to the employer's share of health care costs. The district's current annual spending on employee health care benefits is expected to increase nearly 50% from about $7 million this year to $10.5 million by 2025. If the district had the kind of capped health care plan typical among other school districts, annual savings of $2 to $3 million could be realized. And just a reminder that this $3.4 million increase in health care costs are in addition to the $8 million in property tax losses we know we're going to have. Secondly would be salary stabilization. Working through the collective bargaining process, we encourage you to review all salary schedules for both union and exempt employees to make sure that salaries and step-up increases based on length of service remain compatible with the district resources post-Diablo. Now, to remind you of Melissa's patient analogy and the fact that there are multiple treatment options, one way to narrow the budget gap would be through all cuts. Increasing class size could save, at least in theory, $3 million annually. Healthcare cap, which would need to be negotiated, $2 million to $3 million when fully phased in. School closure, perhaps $500,000. So total, perhaps more than $6 million in cuts. Under scenario two, we could try for only revenue enhancements, which we unhappily believe would be very difficult and highly unlikely. But in theory, a $160 a year parcel tax could generate $6 million. Leasing or selling a surplus property could maybe generate $1 million. A fair reimbursement plan for interdistrict transfers could generate $400,000. And if, eventually, a $10 million endowment provided income, there could be another $400,000 annually. So ballpark total, maybe close to $8 million. However, scenario three is our best guess, and our recommendation is that you go after a combination of actions. Look at class sizes, healthcare costs, a parcel tax, operating efficiencies, finding a middle ground in each of these options. And that could generate $6 million. That on top of the nearly $2 million in savings you've already implemented, and you're a long way toward narrowing that gap. And I, for one, thank you very much for your efforts and hard work in doing that.
Thank you, Mr. Wacker.
Good evening, and I am the final speaker, so that's good news for the presentations coming to an end soon. My name is Christine Johnson, and I'm currently the Director of Development and Communications for Stand Strong, formerly known as the Women's Shelter Program of San Luis Obispo County. I also am a former Morro Bay City Council member, so for you elected members, I feel your pain behind the dais. And lastly, I am the parent of a seventh grader who's going to be on stage soon at the PAC with the Loams band concert playing the tuba. So if I head out a little bit early, you'll know why. Regardless of when Diablo Canyon closes or whether the $36 million in mitigation funding is provided, the district faces substantial and negative changes to its finances. This change will result in a structural budget gap of at least $8 million annually. The district is in this position today due to decisions made far outside of its control. The state of California shifted its energy goals away from nuclear power. That, in turn, altered PG&E's economic calculus for continuing to operate Diablo Canyon, an asset that has benefited the district for several decades. This budget gap is not anyone's fault, but it will be everyone's burden. Yet, here's what is in the district's control. The district can do everything possible to ensure those impacts are absorbed with as little disruption as possible. As a committee, we are confident that we have identified a credible list of potential actions, which, if utilized in a balanced way, will achieve the goal. We recognize that none of these steps will be easy to implement. Neither do we claim to have thought of all the possible remedies. This message is for the board members. We strongly encourage you to actively and relentlessly engage stakeholders, including parents, students, local employers, teachers, staff, union leaders, and community members. We encourage you to continue to engage basically everyone in the process to make fair and workable decisions. And at all cost, take pains to avoid unilateral decision making. Now, this message is for those stakeholders who I mentioned a moment ago. We urge all students, students and all stakeholders, to strive to be constructive in expressing their concerns, to avoid reflective opposition, and to speak truthfully and without accusation. We do want to doubly underscore our belief that the community must confront this budget challenge with open minds and yet with urgency. It's difficult enough to face, standing here today, the financial impacts of losing Diablo Canyon 8 years from now. But we must repeat again, Diablo Canyon could close years earlier than 2025. With that in mind, the district should plan to have an identified and implemented measures to completely close the structural gap within the next 3 fiscal years. Despite the impersonal and clinical tone of the report, we are mindful that these recommendations pose potentially startling and dramatic effects on people we care about deeply, our ambitious students, committed teachers and staff, as well as devoted parents. I wanted to share a story with you that I, too, am a product of a public education system, not in this state, but another state. My mother is an elementary school teacher, my father an education professor, and I even married into a family where my mother-in-law was a 30-year kindergarten teacher, which I think is a really special thing. So when we talk about, we see pie charts and we talk about staff and where the money goes, I think not of numbers and percentages, but I think of people. And beyond that, I know what it takes to run a school, and I know how many people supported my mother in her job as a sixth grade teacher. So it's experiences like that that many of us on the committee have and bring to the process, and we understand that these things are you're facing, that we're all facing the community as well. So while the news may be dire, there are areas of hope. The district has exceptionally skilled staff who care deeply about our students, right from the superintendent through all of the administrative staff that we worked with, to all the principals, the teachers, and down to the custodial staff on site every day at our schools. I wrote this tonight because I just learned it. Another point of hope is the district has had two clean audits in a row. That's terrific. That's great news and really good that your financial house is in order. The last point of hope for my list tonight is that this Blue Ribbon Committee has been the start of an open and extremely transparent process that sets the right tone for future discussions about difficult issues. So in closing, our hope is that this report serves as a foundation for a community-wide conversation that brings together each one of us to ensure that San Luis Coastal Unified continues to be a vibrant center of learning for students, teachers, and staff alike for years to come. We are in this together. We look forward to the challenge, and we believe you will lead us toward the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. And thank you to the entire committee for that very sobering but extremely thorough and thoughtful analysis of the situation in which we find ourselves. We can't thank you enough. You could have written a dissertation with the amount of work that you've put into this, and it's actually very much appreciated. Is there anyone? Okay.
Would you like to go to the public and see if there's...
Yeah. Yes. Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this matter? Please come forward. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Katie Bravante, and I teach elementary music for our district. And I just had a question about the amount of the parcel tax that was proposed and why the sum was suggested at $80.
Dr. Brady?
Actually, yeah, so we investigated the numbers on the parcel tax, and we have a whole menu, but that's for another time where we'll dive deeper into that, because these are just basic, these are general numbers that we believe exist at this point.
And if I can just really quickly assert one other thing that was on the agenda, the youth truth.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? And I just, again, reiterate the request to extend that to the eldest year in the elementary schools. I think it's such a wonderful program, and I think they would we would all value from the fifth graders on the coast and the sixth graders in town.
Thank you, Mrs. Bonte. Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. Well, firstly, I'd like to thank the committee for the time that you dedicated to doing this, that when you were asked, you stepped up, and we're very appreciative. It is sobering, what you had to say, and I think we'll all be digesting what we've heard. For me, I think now the ball is back in Dr. Prater's court, and the charge for you, Dr. Prater, is to... I think begin your community outreach, and I for one will look forward to what you have to present to us perhaps next year further down the road. I mean, the work has just begun now.
Yes, Mrs. Roger, I plan on working the next several weeks on a structure and a process that I can then communicate with everyone so they understand where I'll be, how we're going to reach out, how we're going to engage, and I'll make sure that, that everyone is aware.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak to this matter with the board? Okay. Mr. Quisenberry.
I want to express my gratitude to the committee and urge people to have a very positive interaction with the public. So much of what we hear from news sources and so forth paint an interesting picture of public education. Andrea Seastrand just wrote an opinion piece in the paper and about all this money that's supposedly flowing our way. And I think it's important that if people have a realistic view of the situation in our district and in other districts as well, rather than this inflated and biased kind of opinion about both public education and the amount of money that's spent on our students. And it doesn't reflect accurately the amount of money that's spent by California, which is far less than it's far less than most states. We're ranked very low on per pupil spending. And I think it's very important that the message gets out accurately. And then that's our responsibility. So thank you.
Dr. Prater.
I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you to the Blue Ribbon Committee. Each one of you that spoke tonight brought your heart with you. And I could see it, and you set the tone, as you mentioned. I really appreciate that, and it allows me then to move forward with that same mindset. And like Mr. Quisenberry and Mrs. Roger, and I can speak, I believe, for the whole board, we are going to do this well. It will be difficult, but we will do it well. And I look forward to the journey and the engagement. Thank you again.
Is there an interest on the board to take a break, or do you want to plow on?
Maybe a couple of.
I leave it to you. Yes, we'd like to just take a brief break to thank the committee personally, so thank you for suggesting that.
Bob's really good.
Yes.
Okay.
Awesome. Ready? Let's go.
Boy, do we know how to clear a room.
Board organization.
You're just... Just waiting for Marilyn to come back.
Yeah, there's an outlet down here. You got a cord? I got an outlet right here. This can over here.
Is there a power?
Yes. Yeah. There is one on the outside. No, actually, it's plugged right in here.
I know they do that.
Well, you ask for some.
So, moving along, we are now ready for our annual board reorganization. And that means that we are going to take nominations from the board for the incoming president.
So the way this process works is that the chair will request nominations for president, and the vote will be taken. And the chair will then request nominations for clerk, and the vote will be taken. And following the next agenda item to acknowledge the year's service, that's where I'll come up and speak on your behalf, Dr. Catherine Eisendrath Rodriguez.
Thank you.
And then we'll play musical chairs.
Okay.
That's what we'll do then. So is there anyone on the board who would like to put forth someone as for the position of president?
Okay, I would be pleased to acknowledge his year of service as our clerk and put forth Chris Unger's name to be president of the board.
Beat me. We have a motion by Ms. Roger and a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Ms. 6-0.
I would like to nominate Mark Buckman as the clerk of the board.
Is there a second? Seeing no one dies by lack of a second. Mr. Millar.
I nominate Ellen Sheffer for clerk.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mr. Unger. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It sounds unanimous. So now we play musical chairs.
Do we play musical chairs?
I believe so.
Does she get her... Do we...
Before we do that, I'd like to speak on your behalf. Thank you. Dr. Catherine Eisendrath Rogers became a trustee in the San Luis Coastal Unified School District in 2007 and has become a valued and respected trustee serving the communities of Avila, Los Osos, Morro Bay, and San Luis Obispo. While there are numerous public formalities associated with serving as president to the board, I've discovered a less formal and deeply introspective side of Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. In my experience, she has embraced her role as trustee, devoting countless hours visiting classrooms, attending Measure D workshops, studying board policy, and participating in student-led forums of one sort or another. She is curious and wise, yet humble. She has empathy, but maintains high expectations for student achievement. She's a brilliant thinker and devoted servant to public education. She's truly interested in bringing out the true potential in every child. She believes it's possible to not only say all means all, but to actualize it through persistence and action. She's a mother of two exceptional San Luis Coastal graduates, one with a degree from Reed College in Oregon, and the other, a sophomore currently attending Harvard University. I've enjoyed working with Dr. Eisendrath Rogers this past year as president. She has inspired me with her commitment to the broader vision of the school district, especially as we transition from the closure of Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant and successfully complete our facility projects through Measure D, while maintaining our focus on closing the achievement gap. She has been an excellent collaborator, friendly critic, an exceptional representative leader of the school board. It's been an honor and privilege. As a parting gift and in recognition of Dr. Eisendrath Rogers' distinguished service as president of the Board of Education during the past year, two books will be placed in our district libraries to serve as inspiration to the nearly 8,000 students attending our schools. The following titles were selected by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers for distribution in our libraries. Title, Ish, by Peter Reynolds. A creative spirit learns that thinking ishly is far more wonderful than getting it right. In this gentle new fable from the creator of the award-winning picture book, The Dot. Combining the spareness of fable with the potency of parable, Peter Reynolds shines a bright, bright beam of light on the need to kindle and tend our creative flames with care. The next book, Girls Who Code, by Reshma Sajani. Since 2012, the organization Girls Who Code has taught computing skills to and inspired more than 40,000 girls across America.
Now its founder, Reshma Sajani, wants to inspire you to be a girl who codes. Thank you.
Thank you. That was very kind. And thank you, board, for allowing me to be presidential-ish. Oh, well, thank you. So I'm moving. I'm taking Ellen's spot.
It's great fanfare. I'll move my spot.
Oh, should I move that way? Okay.
Yeah, you're always the past.
Oh, is it? Oh, yes, that's correct. Yes, thank you. Sorry, here. Oh, can I just say one more thing?
No.
As a parting gift, I've given you guys these bottles so that we will not see plastic bottles on our day. Hopefully in the future.
Thank you. So let's move on to item 7.03, adoption of the 2018 board meeting calendar. Dr. Prater?
Yes, I would like to request the board consider this modification to the board calendar. And it's reflective of changes that commitments that are occurring at the board level as well. And I think it aligns with spring break, but what the changes are that's in this proposed calendar change are we're going to maintain the January 16th as we had it in the past for one meeting in January, and then in February we would, instead of having it the first and the third, we would have it the second and the fourth Tuesday, the 13th and 27th, and then that would correspond to March to keep that uniform. The 13th and the 27th of March. Then we would go back into our regular in April because of spring break. We have one board meeting and one Measure D study session. Then in May and June, we go back to the 1st and the 3rd, as is our norm, with the difference being that on the 14th, instead of a Measure D study session, I would like to propose that that date become the board retreat that's customarily done in July. By having this on the 14th, it allows really on June 5th, you will be adopting the budget and the LCAP. So those priorities and goals will be fresh in your mind. So it's sort of a lively time to do the board retreat and establish your priorities for me and the district.
It would also give our staff a little more time and running room over the summer to get that work done. And then in July, we would have a study session for Measure D on July 19th. And then it leads you into August, for which we have the one meeting and the one board study session. So everything else goes back to normal beyond that. So that's my recommendation to you for your consideration.
The only thing I would think about, Dr. Prater, is, and perhaps we want to look at this later, I'm looking at the December date, December 4th. My suspicion is that that's going to be during the CSBA Annual Education Conference week. So, and I tried to look for a date for that today, and I couldn't find one. My guess is it will be that week, though. So we just need to be aware of that when, yes, that when that comes out.
Yeah. We had to do that this year, but not until the fall when we knew, yeah, when the date was. That's a good catch.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address this issue? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Anybody want to make a motion on that?
I'll move adoption of the calendar for 2018 as proposed.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mr. Buckman. Is there any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Oh, I'm sorry, Marilyn. I'm trying to be efficient here.
My eye was really loud. Well, the only thing that I would say is that for those of us that are less tech savvy, could I ask Mrs. Holmes if you would prepare a refrigerator appropriate calendar?
Of course.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. The motion passes 7-0. Let's move on to item number 704, which is the appointment of the committees. So we have several committees. Currently, we have the Central California Schools Financing Authority, which has been Mr. Millar. Mr. Millar, are you still interested in continuing on that committee?
I am, even though the workload is enormous.
Okay.
But you have a special bond with our colleagues in Lucia Mar,
okay,
and we couldn't do it without Julie, of course.
Is there
but
anybody
yes,
else
I,
that
I would be happy to?
Okay. I'm guessing nobody else wants to take on that burden. Ellen Sheffer, you have been Slo County School Boards Association representative.
I didn't know it until a couple of weeks ago.
Would you like to continue in that role? Okay. If it's okay with everybody, Ellen, we'll continue with that. Anybody else want it? Going once. Mr. Quisenberry, you and Mrs. Roger, you've been doing our interest-based bargaining liaisons. Mr. Quisenberry with CSEA and Mrs. Roger with SEIU. Are you both interested in continuing that?
I would like to continue.
Mrs. Roger, would you like to continue? Any objections to that from the rest of the board? Okay, we got that. Mr. Buckman, you are the representative to the Tri-Counties Education Coalition. Are you interested in continuing that? Okay. All right. We'll continue with that. And the Board Policy Subcommittee, currently Mr. Buckman and Mrs. Sheffer. We okay with continuing with that? The Board Policy with Mr. Buckman and Mrs. Sheffer. I'm not doing too well with my first night here. Is everybody okay with that?
Yes?
Okay. Good? Okay. So we've got that taken care of. What? With gratitude. I don't think that this is not, is this an action item, Mrs. Holmes?
It is, but we can simply take it by acclamation.
So okay. Well, then let's just take a motion. I'll go to the public. Is there anybody from the public who would like to address us on this issue? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board for a motion. Would someone like to make a motion?
Could I try I move that we ratify the appointments as detailed.
Yes.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mr. Quisenberry. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Correspondence. We did have two pieces of correspondence. One related to the results of elections of the County Committee on School District Reorganization, and then we received a letter from our auditors talking about the Central California School Financing Authority JPA.
Now, Mr. President, if I can,
yes, sir, Mr. Millar.
We had our scheduled meeting and reviewed this audit. And it was a clean audit and very nicely done.
Great. Okay. And then we, I believe, will bring that back in action consent when we will be doing those things, I believe. Let's move on to public comment. This is a time when anybody who wishes to address the board may. I would also, Ms., do you want to talk about that?
We have one request. If anyone else would like to fill out a form, we'll take it. Do these in order. Or you can approach when after we take the request. Mrs. Holmes will start the timer. You will have 3 minutes in which to speak. And the public speaker's request form I have is from Ms. Van Bierden.
And I guess, do you want to speak now, or would you rather wait until the item comes up?
Yeah. Would you rather wait? Okay, that's fine. Then... Ms. Newhouse, yes. This is the only form I have.
Hi, my name is Judy Newhouser from Los Osos. I'm your proverbial thorn in the side. I have a question first. I tried to put the few little pieces that I wanted to show on the drive, and I was told that there's not going to... The administration was advised at a conference not to have public presentations. I'm not sure what to do at this point.
I told Mrs. Newhouser that when we were at the conference recently, there was some advice made by an attorney at one of the workshops that public speakers should not be bringing presentations and that she should ask your permission. I wasn't sure because we haven't had an opportunity to discuss this, whether you would want to change your practices.
Yeah. My understanding is that you may, and we'll need to confirm this with our counsel, is that the public comment can be oral, can be verbal, but presentations are not allowed.
So in other words, anytime you take comment from the public in this outreach on
so we'll
all of this stuff.
So we'll look into that. We can't have a discussion about this right now. We'll
okay,
look
so
into
no,
it
so no, so
clarify.
No charts, no graphs, no audio visuals.
We'll confirm that at a
Judy,
at our next.
Yeah, I will look for that. I will look into that. But what I was wondering is maybe this would be a good, the information you have we could provide as correspondence, and then when you come up to speak, we'd have a reference point.
This is true, but it doesn't get to the public.
Well, it does. It's posted on correspondence.
Yes,
on
but
agenda.
It's not shown as part of the meeting. If people are at home watching the proceedings, they can't see what it is we're talking about. And
so,
I know
so
in
that's
the past
a good that's a good question. Let me follow up and find out what the recommendation is on that.
The question is if you're asking for full comment from the public, then I'm not sure how that happens without the audiovisual part.
Okay, and I think what Dr. Prater has said is that he'll find out what that requirement is and get back to you. If you would, though, like to make a present that to the board, you're always welcome to provide it as correspondence, and then we'll get a ruling on that.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
So would you like to proceed? We want to make sure that you get your time.
Okay, I would.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I was really pleased to listen to the Blue Ribbon Committee because you are going to be faced with a lot of very difficult choices. And so I really picked up on the idea of urgency, and there needs to be fast urgency on things. And so I'd like to have a little tiny piece that could be done now, and it has to do, again, with the CalCard purchases. I did not bring my paper since I had my little thumb drive, but it was over $3,000 in the last 2 months was spent on food at the district office. One of those charges was for over $700. There were at least six that were over $100. When you look at it on the calendar, it's like every Monday. There seems to be a Millstone Tavern. Every Wednesday, there are other things. There's a $200 bill to Tognazzini. I mean, I'm a little appalled that the district office feels that this is an okay use of district taxpayer money. As a teacher, we always put our own money into the pot for any food that we brought into the school. whether it was for staff meetings, whether it was for parties, whatever it was. We put our own money into it. And we are not as well paid as district office staff. So there's an issue of optics, what it looks like, and there's an issue of fairness. So, you know, your longest journey starts with a small step. So you have a long journey on finding ways to save money, and this would be a really easy first step. Since I still have a minute left, I'm going to tell you one of the things that if you decide you still want to spend that money, you know, I work as a volunteer at Monarch Grove in the Zoom In Club, which is an after-school club for kids, EL learners, and other kids who do not have homework help. It is staffed by one EL aide. She has 27 students, first through fifth grade. They all come with different homework. And one person is trying to help them with their homework, and they all need help. They do not understand, especially their math. They don't have the language to be able to do the English in a meaningful way. You could take that money that's being spent on food, and you could put it towards an aide who would assist that teacher, that bilingual aide, and it would be services going directly to students. I think we have to really start asking for every single expense, how does this affect students? And I don't see how a $200 Tognazzini bill affects students. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to address the public about an item not on the agenda at this time?
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to item number 9.01, business and budget update.
Yeah, I just wanted to give Julie and her staff just kudos for the audit process. Since I've been here, and in my role now as CBO, we've had clean audits, never had issues, and that's directly attributed to the work that they put in every day. So kudos to Julie and her staff, and just a thank you to them. And that's it.
Okay.
We have a lot going on about budget later on in the agenda, so we'll...
Okay. Item 9.02, Educational Services Update.
Thank you. I was going to give you a quick update on the California Public Utilities Commission, but the Blue Ribbon Committee did mention some of that. We are anxiously awaiting to see if there's a determination this week, and we are obviously doing our part to continue to pursue possibilities and continue to look for those funding opportunities. This is kind of a great season for celebrations and an opportunity that we get to see a lot of talented students showcased. So we encourage you and the public to participate as you can and celebrate with our students. Also, due to the fires, we have been just monitoring air quality. So just wanted to update you on that. Obviously, we want to ensure our student safety, and principals and teachers have done a great job of making sure that they're communicating with students that are struggling and ensuring that we're taking the proper precautions. Just wanted to let you know. Thanks.
Thank you. Let's move on to item 9.03, Measure D update.
Yeah, so we have a board study session on Thursday. So my goal is to kind of bring the board up to date. We got our DD estimates from Acme Construction Company, so I'm going to give the board kind of an overall budget, where we're at in terms of projects, those types of things I've been working on the last couple of days. We'll review kind of the projects that are happening right now, as well as talk about the audit and the performance aspect, those types of things.
Mr. Pinkerton, could you tell me what you mean by DD estimates?
So that's the design development stage. So basically, kind of schematic design phase is kind of when you kind of the main idea of what you're going to do. Then we get a lot more detail to this design detail phase. And it's kind of that check-in point with the board and with us in terms of, hey, this is what things look like they're going to cost. And from there, you go into CDs or construction documents. So now is the time that if we're going to make some changes, if we're going to, you know, do some things across the board to kind of bring our budgets together, we have to make those decisions now.
Excuse me. Let's move on to item number 10.01. This would be a resolution number 061718, first interim report as of 10/31/17.
Hello again. It is that time of the year when we present our first interim report, and I will try to keep it brief because we do have a long meeting tonight. But I'll just kind of go through some of the changes that have occurred since budget adoption, and you can see how our revenues and our expenses have both changed. And one thing, I kind of thought that Jonathan was going to mention this. We did have an audit adjustment. It was actually in our favor. We set up a notes receivable, which you'll see on the first slide when we get there, having to do with an accounts receivable for the employee retention agreement. Let's see. Kim, could you move it to the first slide? Oh, sorry. we have our original beginning balance, which was $60,482,000, and then we did have that audit adjustment, which actually added to the beginning balance, and you can see that in the SACS report on one page that I mentioned in the narrative. I can't remember the page number right now. Our estimated revenues, you can see, went up by about $4 million. That includes about $1.4 million of that was carryover. About $1.5 was an increase in property taxes. We had about $500,000 in donations and billings, and our additional one-time mandated cost money is part of that. And then on the expense side, we also increased by about $4 million. And that's also due to the carryover and the restricted ending balances, which are budgeted only in expense, not in revenue. And some other one-time expenses are in there. So you can see that our estimated ending fund balance for the general fund really did not change much. It went from about $15,975,000 to just a little bit over $16 million. Oh, I've got this, don't I? Oops, wrong way. There we go. So our property taxes went up about 5.2% over what they were last year and about 2.1% higher than what we had in our budget, which was kind of an unexpected benefit and probably one that we won't always see, but it was good for this year. Our unrestricted carryovers have been budgeted, and again, those are just in the expense accounts, which means that comes from our ending balance. We don't have revenues that offset that. Our restricted ending balances are the same way, except that they're restricted programs for certain things that we do with those. Sorry. Our carryover was about $1.4 million, as I mentioned. We did not budget anything. We've taken it out of this year's budget and all future projections, the PG&E mitigation money, so that's no longer in there. Our one-time mandated cost reimbursement is budgeted at $147 per ADA, or about $1 million. A reminder that we're still owed about $5 million from the state for the mandated cost claims. Mall revenues at $150,000. Our donations and billings, as you know, they always go up throughout the year. Right now, it was an increase of about $500,000. We budget our special ed revenues based on what the county office tells us, and those have been adjusted for their first interim estimates. Our current contribution to special ed is about $8.5 million, and as you may recall, our expenses in special ed continue going up because of salaries and benefits, and we don't really seem to be getting much more in revenues, so that's why we keep seeing our contributions go up. And in this budget, we have no transfers between our general fund and Fund 20 to cover our other retirement benefits. So our revenue sources, you can see that our property taxes are the vast majority of our revenues. We have other LCFF revenues that come from the state mostly. Some of it is the old categorical funds that we still receive. We also receive money for the Education Protection Act. We make transfers out of the general fund to the adult ed fund and also to pay for the charter school students. And we also have special ed property tax revenues in there. We take out that STRS on behalf amount because, as you know, we don't really receive revenue for that. It's just on paper. It's just a revenue in and an expense out, and we never receive any revenue or really have to pay any expense. They just want to see it on paper. And our local revenues go up throughout the year, so that'll probably increase as we go through the year.
I can't remember which way this goes. And then our expenditures are still at about 84% of our revenues, which is right about where we want them. Our employee benefits are at about 20% of expenditures, and of course those are going to continue going up. That does not include that STRS on behalf, so that's our true benefits. That's PERS and STRS and health and welfare and all the other payroll taxes that we have to pay. And as you can see here, our benefit rates, we want to keep talking about this because this is going to have a big impact on our budget. In 13-14, you can see that our STRS amount that we actually paid was about $3 million. By 2021, we expect it to be about $7.6 million. And PERS in 13-14 was $1.6 million that we paid. By 2021, it's going to be over $4 million. And that is projected to continue going up, I believe, until it's 28%, last I heard. And that was the short version. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to take those. And then Ryan's going to talk about the 10-year projection.
Any questions from the board right now? Mr. Buckman.
Thanks, Chris. Sorry, I got to change glasses here. Just one real quick question, I guess. On page 12 of the SACS, it talks about a reserve capability of 12.57% with the state now giving us the ability to put pretty much as much reserve as we want. Is this a point where we should be looking at raising the reserves?
Are you talking about from the 10% to something higher?
What our capability is.
I think it would be difficult at this point.
I think, if anything, and this is a tough part, but we're actually probably going to be looking at lowering our actual reserve rate as a district, most likely in out years in terms of the budget. Maintaining a 10% reserve with the type of reductions that we're going to be making is going to be very difficult to do. So most districts, 3% is what they, you know, but you want to have as much reserves as possible. That said, you want to try to keep your reserves up. But in terms of having that policy in place, it's going to be difficult in terms of where we're headed and keeping that that level as much as we're going to want to. In particular, as a basic aid school district, it's a cash flow issue for us. So we don't receive our revenues at kind of stable times throughout the year. We receive them in two kind of big periods. So it's really critical that we have enough to actually cover our cash flow in some of those months. So those are all things we're going to have to really dive into, I think, and educate the board and talk about as we move forward in terms of the reserve discussion.
Okay.
Probably the scariest slide is this one, I would say to the board. So based on what Julie just said about benefits, that red is going to overtake that blue. The purple is going to overtake the blue. So, you know, when you and the red and the green, right, in terms of those things. So the purple is going to grow in those top because our water bills aren't going down. We're still going to have capital outlay projects. There's still going to be a certain amount of books and supplies and materials that kids and teachers are going to need. So that's the toughest part because the people part is going to shrink. We're going to have less people that are going to cost more. And so that's probably the toughest thing that we're going to face kind of moving forward from this budget aspect.
Okay. And
I'm going to go over the 10-year budget. If you can pop it up too, but we'll take.
Okay. Marilyn. Yeah, Marilyn.
Yeah, I had asked this question previously. I think I asked it of Dr. Prater, and I'm sure he gave me an answer, but I can't remember what the answer was, so I'm asking it again. I have a memory that in our collective bargaining agreement, that if our property tax revenues were above 5%, that it triggered additional money on the salary schedule. Is that correct?
So we had several different bargaining agreements over the past 4 years. And so that one was about 3 years ago where that happened, and it actually did happen for the district, and we actually did have to go back and renegotiate. In our current agreement, I think it was like 7% or 8%.
Okay.
So, but it's over 5 in terms of, so that really didn't kick in terms of this year.
So Rip Van Winkle will just go back to sleep now?
It was at one point.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So
Ryan, is there anybody else from the board? Ryan, do you want to do the 10-year projection before we bring this forward
as a resolution? Yeah, just really quick, and it's actually, can you, if you can click on for me. So, you know, when we do the interim, first interim, second interim, oftentimes it shows a deficit. It's, you know, and it's not really the true reflection of how the year ends. So this is, right, our projection, our 10-year projection, 16-17 being a real year. Those are the unaudited actuals of what really happened versus kind of, okay, you know, now we know what our property tax rate is going to be. So Julie puts that information in. Now we know what our salaries are and our benefits and our employees. So she puts that information in. So as the year progresses, that 17-18 becomes more realistic. So one of the key things that I'll point out in this particular revenue slide is the $1 million of extra money we received from the state this year for mandated costs. The economy has been so good over the past few years that the governor has not only increased state funding for schools, LCFF, but he has been paying down, and the legislature has been paying down our mandated costs. So we have been able to afford everything that we have partially because of those one-time dollars we have received. The outlook for 18-19 is actually so far from the CASBO, and the which is the California School Business Officials, you know, conference and things like that. Looks like next year, the economy looks like it's going to be okay. In fact, the governor's last year, it looks like he will try to fully fund LCFF for districts. Now, that's a good and bad thing for us, because if he fully funds LCFF, there's not as much one-time money in the pot potentially. So it's going to be really interesting to see what the governor does, because he has really tried to not put all of this new revenue into an ongoing cost for the state. So he's purposefully kept some of that out and given it as one-time money over the past few years, because he didn't want to have that, you know, future liability necessarily. Now, he's not running again, right? This is it for him. So is he going to make a statement in 18-19 in terms of fully funding LCFF, which he really wanted to do? Is there going to be one-time money aside? So that's something we'll find out hopefully in January with the governor's budget, kind of see where we're at. But it's definitely something that, you know, you can kind of get fooled a little bit when you look at revenues at times with things like that, when you get those nice, healthy, one-time increases. So, Kim, if you go all the way down to the expenditure side, and again, this gives a breakdown of if we were a basic aid school district, you know, in terms of our community funded status versus LCFF, what that would be. So we stay, it looks in the long term like we're going to stay in that same status, right? Again, as we've talked about, as Julie talked about, the PERS and STERS impact on our district and all districts in the state of California is going to have a huge impact throughout the state. Now, a lot of districts that are LCFF funded are getting a lot of extra money, and they have been the last couple of years. So they're kind of rolling with these increases, and things are good. But once that LCFF is fully funded, are there going to be increases? I guarantee you those increases are not going to keep up with those increases. And so we are going to see districts around the state have huge financial issues, just like we are going to go through because of our loss of unitary tax, as well as some of those same increases in personnel costs. The health benefits one that was brought up by the Blue Ribbon Committee, we don't have a cap on health care. So it's the district pays, you know, the first $5,000 and then shares it with the employees. So that's a tough one for us, because not only does the district have those huge increases, but realize the employees have those same increases too. So it's a real tough, that's one we're really going to have to work with our unions together to figure out the best way to move forward based on our financial situation. But it's tough. And then lastly, if you just go down to the bottom line, which, hey, this is where we're at. So we project a surplus this year. So we balanced our budget last year. As a board, in terms of that budget that the board voted on, we cut $2 million. We started at the district office. We made a lot of cuts in terms of up here and with staff and personnel expenditures. There were some school sites adjustments as well. We purposefully kept class size low. So we did not hit the classroom a lot, in particular with our elementary sites. We did see some growth that was unexpected, at, I will say, at Laguna and San Luis Obispo High School. So theirs just kind of grew because we had 100 extra kids that we had no idea that were coming the year before, both of those grade levels. So those are all things we're going to have to look at in terms of looking at the future and where we're headed. But we do feel like this year in particular, we're in good shape. I actually expect that number to grow by the time we're finished with the school year in terms of fiscal year. Now, that's just making up for the deficit we had last year, right? I mean, in terms of overall revenues and expenditures. But you can see the scary number is the one next to it. So quickly, if without that one-time $1 million, and with the increases in STIRS and PERS and health benefits, you see that number jumps dramatically in 1 year. So when the Blue Ribbon talks about a sense of urgency, it's really is important for us to really get this process going, think it through, do what we can, do as much as we can, as they said, through attrition, and do what we have to do to make sure that we keep that bottom line where it's going to be. So I'm hopeful, really hopeful, that we're going to get some more one-time money next year, which will give us a little bit of breathing room in terms of making those reductions and having that plan put together. But you'll see quickly that our nice, healthy reserve right now can go away very quickly if we don't keep up with it. So I like the board to see this projection. I think it's more real-based. Now, that said, you know, water bills are going up, not only for residents, but for the district. I mean, things like that. We don't have a lot of that built in to this budget. So that was one of the things the Blue Ribbon Committee that brought up, you know, in terms of when I reviewed the budget information with them, they were wondering why I didn't have increases in some of our other costs. And so, you know, it's things that we just try to cut back on items when we can, when it comes to materials and supplies or, you know, less water, those types of things. But it's, you know, it's there's a lot of work that goes into keeping those numbers where they need to be. So that's kind of a big picture. Again, kind of where the state is, California. Recession, it looks like a 1920 is kind of, you know, going to kind of the financial talks that we've seen, that if a recession comes along, it looks like about 1920 is where they expect that to kick in. So we'll see, you know, reality of how that happens.
What I'd like to do is go to the public right now. Is there anybody that would like to comment on this from the public? Because your comments will help inform the board discussion. Mrs. Neuhauser.
Hi, Judy Neuhauser, Los Osos. So am I allowed to use your graphics when I'm talking? Okay, I'd like to see slide 5. Just it'll help you understand what I'm trying to say. Okay, yeah, that's the one I wanted. So this is a question that I have. You have certificated union, you have a classified union, and I honestly don't understand how the administrative salaries are set. But all of the benefits are put in one lump. But you're going to have to negotiate those benefits within each of those unions. So it seems like it would be helpful to have, where it says certificated salaries, have a really dark blue or something or that is certificated benefits, and then go to classified salaries and have a pink or something that's classified benefits, and then go to administrative and have a dark green that would be, that's right next to the salaries on all of these, administrative salaries and then administrative benefits. And that way you get to see how that benefit chunk actually needs to be looked at within each of those negotiations with your unions. Am I making sense? Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And actually, Judy, I do believe that is broken out in the if you go in the detail of the first interim report, that is broken out in there, I believe. Is that not correct?
I don't know that the administrators are considered certificated, so those are
most
sometimes
most administrators are considered certificated.
Classified
some
and
are
benefits are that part is separated. So certificated versus classified, okay. You can't see the difference in benefits, and that's in the 10-year budget as well.
Okay, thanks. Is there anybody else from the public that would like to address us on this issue? Okay, I'll bring it back to the board. Any discussion from the board? Would someone like to make a motion on this resolution? Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Millar. Any other discussion from the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. Mrs. Holmes, this is a roll call vote, I believe.
Yes, Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
Let's move on then to item number 10.02. This is also a resolution 01718, Measure D, Bishop's Peak Leaseback Projects.
Yeah, so we had two really qualified applicants for our leaseback project. Mano Construction was the low bidder in terms of the overall rates for overhead and profit, as well as general conditions, along with, you know, kind of looking at the entire package that Mano Construction put forward. So we're asking the board tonight to approve the resolution and later on the contract for Mano Construction to specifically for the multi-purpose room construction as well as office modernization and future classroom modernization at Bishop's Peak Elementary School.
Okay, is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this issue? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Is there any board discussion on this? Mr. Millar?
I was going to move the resolution, but okay. I'll hold off if there's discussion.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Seconded by Mr. Questenberry. Any further board discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a roll call vote. Mrs. Holmes?
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mr. Questenberry? Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Passes 7-0.
Let's move on to item number 11.01, nomination to CSBA Delegate Assembly Region 9C. I believe that's Dr. Prater.
Yes. Each year we nominate an individual for the CSBA delegate role, and we currently have Mr. Buckman. And he has submitted his interest and biography, if you will, into pursuing this. So I would recommend that you consider his nomination.
Great. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this issue? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Yes, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
I would like to nominate Mark Buckman for this position.
And I would second that. Is there any discussion? Any discussion from board members? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Carries 7-0. Let's move on to item number 11.02, approval of revised annual declaration of need for fully qualified educators. Mrs. Newland.
Yes. So every year we present this to you. It has to go as an action item on as part of the agenda and not on the consent agenda. This document declares basically that we in the personnel office do a diligent search in order to find fully prepared educators. So it means that sometimes we have people that come forward and go, oh, I just know this great person, they're great with kids, but if they don't have a background to teach physics, they can't teach physics in the state of California. That's basically what this is saying. So this document's saying basically we will do a diligent search, that Dr. Prater's signing off, that yes, we do diligent searches for fully qualified educators. However, not in every circumstances, we don't always find fully prepared teachers. So when that happens, we will go down kind of a hierarchy, a levels. And so this is saying that we believe we're going to have troubles finding people that have a CLAD certification. And the reason you're getting this mid-year is because we have to resubmit this because we didn't anticipate needing this at the beginning of the year. But we've had a lot, as you noticed, a lot of hires at Laguna and San Luis Willis High School a lot more than what we anticipated having because of the growth of students. And so we've hired people from out of state. Traditionally, when people come from out of state, they don't have the English language authorizations that they need. So this is increasing that amount. I don't know if you have any questions.
Mrs. Schiffer. Dr. Eisengrath Rogers.
I just have a question. If someone is not CLAD certified and at the time of hire, do we have a specific length of time in which they need to attain that certification?
So we give them an emergency. The state will authorize us to allow to give them an emergency credential for a year in that area with the understanding that within the year they will have made progress or completed it. And we can have up to the amount of emergency credentials that we list in this document. So if we haven't listed enough, we have to turn in a revised one. That's why you're seeing this.
Okay. And if they're, you said make progress or have completed it, if they've only made progress, how long do they have to actually complete?
Well, it's on an individual basis. The state looks at what they've completed. So they have to have made an effort, you know, in taking classes, past classes, that kind of thing. If they even started it, they're not going to get another emergency document. But if they can show, hey, I've done all these things, perhaps there was a maternity leave that interrupted the process, or there was a family illness and they weren't able to complete it, they have to put forward their compelling reasons why they weren't able to complete it.
Okay, and do we as a district have a requirement as to how long they have to complete it?
Well, we as a district have to have somebody under an authorization, so if the state will not give them a second emergency document, then we can't employ them.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Catherine, and then Jim, and then Mark. Okay, Jim.
Yeah, my question is in regard to the bilingual authorization, and you indicated a need for four teachers. Is this due to the dual immersion program?
Yeah, that would be Pacheco.
Okay.
Would be the only place that we would have a need for bilingual authorizations. And so, you know, sometimes we overguess again, so we don't have to come back and keep asking you for more. I didn't check what we had at the beginning of the year. Some of these numbers could be the same. I know that the CLADs increased because we didn't have enough.
So what you're saying, this is your best estimate that you...
Best estimate
you will need for...
For the whole year. So some of them
year.
We may have used already
okay.
for the beginning of the year. This is from the beginning of the school year all the way till June.
Okay. Thank you.
Mark?
Thank you. So, Kristen, across the state, there's a real crisis. In bilingual is one of the biggest. So as we look at this, and this really is just basically a plug to let the public know that there's a major teacher shortage, but are you expecting to have difficulty at this point?
Well,
I mean, we usually have a good record.
Because we're already in December, it would have to be really a change in staffing. Someone would have to leave. We would have to have, like if somebody went out on a maternity leave and we weren't able to fill, you know, we'd have to have somebody that was qualified to fill that job. And those are the tricky ones. But we don't anticipate that at this point in time. I mean, there could be, again, a maternity leave. We're being faced with more maternity leaves because of the age of the population of our teachers.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to... Oh, I'm sorry, Jim.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just... this question is in regard to the intern program. You expect maybe two interns. Yep. Do we currently have two interns?
Yes, we do.
Okay. And they're either from one of these three
yes, they
programs.
Are.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay. And anybody else? I have a question. We have three universities that are in our internship program, Bradman, Laverne, and National. I'm just curious, why isn't Cal Poly on that list?
Cal Poly doesn't have an intern program.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this issue? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. Anybody want to make a motion?
I'll move approval.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Buckman.
I'll second.
Seconded by Mr. Quesenberry. Is there any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. All in favor? Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Carries 6-0. Mr. Millar has stepped out. Let's move on to item 11.03, approve legislative increases to minimum wage. Mrs. Newland.
Yes, so effective January 1st, the minimum wage will be going up to $11. And the one position that it did affect was our student workers. And so we, our student aides, we had to increase it on our salary schedule to keep pace with the minimum wage change.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this issue? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion?
I'll move approval of item 11.03.
Okay, we have a motion by Mrs. Rogers.
I'll second.
And a second by Dr. Eisendrath. Rogers, is there any further discussion from the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's go on to item number 11.04. This is approve revisions to board policy 6144, instruction, controversial issues. This is our second reading. And we do have someone from the public who would like to address the board after Mrs. Grath.
Thank you. Yes, this is our second reading of controversial issues, and you can see the noted adjustments from either Gamut suggestions or the board subcommittee.
And now, Ms. Van Buren, I believe this is where you wish to speak, and Mrs. Holmes will start the clock at 3 minutes.
Hi, no. I'm Marika Van Burden.
Okay.
Oh, and
hi.
And hi. This is Olivia, my counterpart. We're here representing Mayor Heidi Harmon on issues that she feels need to be addressed with the public. And so Olivia did get the chance to speak with Mayor Harmon today about her concerns with this revised policy. So I'm going to let Olivia speak.
Hi, good evening. Hey, first of all, I just wanted to say thank you so much for looking into these revisions. It is, you know, I've looked at them, I've read them, I've looked at the corresponding AR report specifically for teaching controversial issues, and it's very clear and evident that there's been a lot of work and effort to going into this, so thank you so much for that work. So there are a lot of controversial issues. And some are more easily identifiable than others. So I think what is a little bit gray are these controversial issues that perhaps are controversial only because there's a large body of individuals who are denying their facts, such as climate change. So we have political leaders that are saying that climate change is not real, but then you have a majority of the scientific population saying it's clearly fact. So have you guys had discussion within the board on how teachers and how our schools might address controversial issues specifically like these that are just kind of gray, that are not super clear cut, and one person's opinion may be skewed as fact?
That's it. Thank you. Mrs. McGrath, would you address that issue? So I guess what you're saying is What becomes a controversial issue based on who believes it's a controversial issue, right?
Yes. Well,
okay.
Specifically when we have such a high
right.
majority of data and fact to
right.
to support it. Yeah.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay.
Mrs. McGrath.
I think the best way to address that is to keep in mind that it's a teacher's responsibility to present all sides of issues to students. And I think that probably the best line that addresses that within your policy here is the example of a guest speaker. If a guest speaker is presenting only one point of view on an issue, a teacher shall be responsible for ensuring that students also receive information on opposing viewpoints. Therefore, have a balanced perspective. Teachers shouldn't take kind of a bias or a personal lean one direction, but present concepts in order to teach students to think and discern information.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Anybody else from the public that would like to address us on this issue? Okay. Seeing none, thank you very much. I'll bring it back to the board. Yes. Someone like to make a motion?
I'd move approval of board policy 6144.
Do we have, and seconded by Mr. Buckman. We have a motion, I should say, by Mr. Millar and a second by Mr. Buckman. Is there any further board discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? The motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to item 11.05, approve revisions to board policy 6145.2, instruction athletic competition. Second reading. Mrs. McGrath.
Thank you. Yes, this is a second reading of athletic competition board policy. But one important note that we mentioned last time is that the athletic directors reminded us that we are responsible for following CIF rules and guidelines, and that that is a strong guideline to be able to follow, and that is noted within your board policy.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this issue? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion?
I do have a question.
Sure,
actually.
Go ahead. Yeah, of course.
And I don't know if I'm presenting this question to you, Kim, or to the committee that may have reviewed this, but I do have a question about when it talks about consistent with gender identity, whether that is specified as gender at birth or gender with which you identify.
With which you identify is my understanding.
I do believe it's with which you identify, but I believe that also I was the athletic directors were helping me a lot because there's a lot of new information around this in the athletic world. So there is kind of an appeal process that CIF would guide someone through and would lead our district through if need be in that type of a situation.
Okay, so you feel that there's no need to clarify, as per rules, you think answers that question?
Right. CIF guidelines, I think, as they continue to revise their information, it's best for us to stay aligned with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else from the board? Would someone like to make a motion? Well,
I'll move approval of the board policy 6145.2.
We have a motion by Mr. Quesenberry and a second by Mr. Millar. Any other discussion from the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to item 11.06, approved contract for request for qualification, Bishop's Peak Elementary School, lease-leaseback construction services. Mr. Pinkerton.
So, yeah, these are actually the contract documents that we discussed earlier in terms of Mano construction. And so the nice part about starting now and why we're doing this is with lease-leaseback, we can have pre-construction services. Mr. Mano's company can be involved in this kind of planning stages and getting a kind of a jump start on modifications and things so that we, in the long run, we have the best plans and the less changes that are moving forward. So this is really the same contract that we've had in the past in terms of our lease-leaseback contracts that we've put forward with Mr. Mano, with Acme Construction, with Wison Construction in the past. So there's not a lot of changes in terms of the contract itself other than those percentiles and percentages that were part of the RFP.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this issue? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Any board discussion? Would someone like to make a motion?
I'll move the approval of the contract for Bishop's Peak Elementary School between the district and Mano Construction.
We have a motion.
I'll second.
We have a second by Mrs. Sheffer, a motion by Mr. Quesenberry. Any discussion by the board? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to item 11.07, Measure D, approve amendment to number 3 lease-leaseback contract with Acme Construction, setting guaranteed maximum price for the San Luis Obispo High School Old Gym Phase 2.
So Kim, if you can click on the actual amendment itself. So this is the third phase of a three-phase project with the old gym. First phase was the non-DSA portion of, so it didn't have to go through the approval process of the Department of State Architects. As we were going through phase one, we realized everyone's there. We should probably do some of this work right now prior to phase two starting. So that was an amendment that we brought that the board approved. Well, it did get approved, the restroom portion of the old gymnasium. I believe, has the board, have you had the opportunity to go see the middle section now with the new floor and Not yet. So if not, we may do that Thursday if you haven't had that opportunity to walk down. But so this basically is the GMP, so the last amendment basically to the GMP to complete the entire project at the old gym. In particular, the restrooms on both sides that's tied to this GMP. So at the very bottom, it goes through the first page is kind of this amendment, this work for phase two, and then the last page is the actual impact on the overall GMP, all three amendments together. There was a lot of unforeseen work as we went through this. And things that we, you know, it's when you take an old kind of iconic building like that and you start making it beautiful again, every sore spot pops out, right? I mean, so you, as you go through, there are things that just came up throughout that process. So those are things that Mr. Holcomb and myself on a weekly basis meet with Steve Stewart, the project manager. And so constantly going over every single one of those. In fact, Mr. Holcomb was down with Mr. Stewart today, walking that project and seeing what these things are and moving through the process. So the board's going to be able to see this in its kind of overall standpoint on Thursday, when I kind of show you all the kind of Measure D projects and budgets and architect fees and where we're at. So I will be sharing that kind of encompassing view of it. This is more than we had originally expected. I mean, just to be honest, in terms of the old gym and modernization there. That said, I don't think there's any wasted money in terms of this project and moving it forward. So whereas like the annex project, there were some things like tile roof versus asphalt shingle, things like that. There's really nothing in this project that stands out that are kind of reduction strategies that we can use. And I think once you see it and once when it's complete, the fact that we've been able to renovate that building to what it really looks like, this brand new facility, it's beautiful.
Ryan, do you recall what the original estimate was for the old gym?
You know, I want to say it was more around $2 million.
So
significantly higher.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So did I can't read the number. I apologize. So was it within
$2,971,000?
Okay, so it was
with the amendment.
Right.
So some of that's owner contingency. Now we've used up a lot of it, owner contingency, you know, throughout the first two phases. So in terms of phase two, the DSA part, we'll see how it goes. Again, this is one that Mr. Holcomb, Mr. Stewart are constantly going through and looking at, and each allowance, each contingency that comes up.
Okay.
Can I just say that it is jaw-droppingly beautiful in that gym.
It's very nice.
The floor alone, just you will be amazed. It is truly beautiful.
Right.
So, and that facility, too, has kind of changed its vision as well, I will say, as we've gone through this process. So where one side is going to kind of be an all-school fitness, you know, weight room with restrooms, the middle section with the bleachers out, the brand. I mean, they've taken that floor that's however old that building is, and it's never been taken all the way down. It is absolutely beautiful. You can't buy wood like that anymore, is what the contractor's wood floor. And then the thought is that we're actually going to take the other side, and that's going to become the band room. So that's going to be where the band, because of its growth, because of the facility itself, where they can use that front area in the old gym as their kind of storage, locker, music room. And then they'll have a nice big room with a restroom as their band room. So, and then we'll turn the band room, will become, you know, another classroom space. So that's kind of the long-term vision that's kind of came out of those spaces. And I think everybody at the high school is very excited about that.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this issue? Seeing none, I'll bring it back. Any board discussion? Mr. Quisenberry.
Well, I just want to move approval of amendment number 3 to the old gym at San Luis High.
I'd like to second.
There's been a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Any other discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back for vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to the action consent. Please let me know if you want to pull an item. 12.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Is that a pull, Mark?
No.
Okay. Authorization to teach 12.02, authorization to teach outside credential authorization. 12.03.
I think that's a pull, please.
You wanted 12.02 pulled?
Yes, please.
12.03, certification to the Board of Education temporary athletic coaches for the 2017-18 winter sports season.
I'm sorry, it's 12.03 I need to pull, Chris.
Okay, so 12.02 is...
Not 12.02.
12.03.
Thank you.
12.04, approval of warrants and payroll. 12.05, approval of purchase orders and CalCard purchases. 12.06, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 12.07, acceptance of donations. 12.08, disposition of surplus property. And 12.9, acceptance of the 2016-17 audit report for the district. Can we have a motion to approve items 12.01, 12.02, and then 05 to 09? Motion by Mr. Millar, second by Mr. Quisenberry. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on these issues? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay.
Thinking for a moment here.
Let's move to item number 12.03, Mark.
So when I looked at this, this was bringing on some of the walk-on coaches, and I'm not seeing that now. There it is. And I just wanted to thank all the walk-on coaches. They really bring a benefit. They also show students the tremendous interest that the community has in their schools and help bring that on. The other thing that I did notice in there, there was a name that I thought I recognized, and it was Kurt Collins. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to say thank you to Kurt for... I'm sorry?
Yeah,
Valwright too.
Oh, Valwright, thank you for their continued service and interest in the students in our district. So I move approval of 12.03.
I'll second.
It's been moved by Mr. Buckman, seconded by Mrs. Schiffer. Anybody from the public would like to address us on this issue? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Carries 7-0. Item 12.04, you asked for that to be pulled, Mr. Miller?
I pulled because I have to recuse myself. My wife is employed by PMSM Architects.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on 12.04? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Would someone like to make a motion?
I move approval of 12.04.
Motion by Mr. Quisenberry for 12.04.
Second
by Mr. Buckman. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? One abstention. Let's move on to item 13.03, advanced agenda. Does anyone have any advanced agenda items? Seeing none, we'll move on to item 14.01, reports by board members. We'll start with Mr. Quisenberry, Mr. Buckman, anybody else? Mrs. Schiffer, so wait, Jim. Mark, did I say, I think Jim, Mark, Ellen, anybody else?
I'll flip for it, Chris.
Okay. All right, Jim.
Well, I had an opportunity to visit the Los Osos water treatment plant. We do not call it the sewage plant, although that's what they treat, then remove the water and then make it cleaner and nearly potable. So a couple of observations is the district does have a pending contract for that water. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Mr. Pinkerton, the purple pipe water, yes.
We're kind of waiting for them to have it ready to go.
Right, and they anticipated more dirty water than they're getting. So I don't know when or how much that water will be available for watering the landscape at our schools that are close to that purple pipe. The other thing that was interesting to me, and I thought, you know, there's a lot of science involved in water treatment,
And I asked the person taking us on the tour whether the schools had been there yet. Certainly it seemed to me like it would, the middle school would be a prime one in the high school. And I'm not sure they have had some interest, but I think it would be well worth an excursion or a field trip or some kind of program. And the other piece of that was that for possible CTE, they're looking for technicians. There are opportunities in many communities, especially considering that both Morro Bay and Cayucas will soon be constructing water treatment plants. Anyway, I thought that was something that should be on somebody's horizon. So thank you very much.
Yeah.
Just quickly, Jim, at the time that the sewer went through, it was a key component of the success of the way they proposed the sewer or the water treatment plant or whatever, that we would, the district would agree to take the tertiary treated water at Los Osos Middle School and I think also at Baywood. And so I had always anticipated that we would be taking it and that they needed us to in order to make the project viable.
And my understanding that was before the infamous drought, which of course is now over, right? And the people in Los Osos have been conserving water at a record rate, although I did go to a CSD meeting where the actual purveyor of the Los Osos Water District had a 20% increase over the two-month period. But nevertheless, they're getting about half of the expected volume of water. So that water has to be returned to the aquifer one way or the other. So I think that's priority number one. And then any water that can be used for landscaping is a secondary priority. That's my understanding. I'm not sure that that's 100% accurate. But anyway, we're contracted to get some when available.
Do you think that we could, Dr. Brader?
I just recall speaking with Bruce Gibson right before this went through, mm-hmm. and part of that commitment, the phone call to me was to enter into that sort of conversation around tertiary treated water, and so it's a natural thing. I mean, we have our fields. It's a win-win as long as it's posted communicated properly.
I guess, and from what Jim's telling us, as long as the water is available.
Is this agendized?
No, I think, yeah, that's a good question, Mr. Millar. Thank you.
That's the one every meeting.
Yep. All right. Let's move on to Mark.
Thanks. I'm hoping I'm not redundant on some of these. I did, with some of the other school board members, get to go to the Student Senate, but I only poked my head in, and it was really impressive, and I really want to thank you. I wish I could have stayed longer. I took some time out and did go up to the community school. I was in the area and took a walk around. We evidently are not welcome there when there are students in the classrooms, but there was some good discussion about you got to keep kids from certain gangs in separate areas, and you got to be really careful. So it was good to go see where we're sending some of our expelled students. Again, along with, I think, the entire board, I was at the Morro Bay band concert. I think that was last night. I got to sit with Maria Hernandez's family. She's a DLAC member. Her son, Norberto, was in the the concert. And I sat with some of his family members who drove all the way from Monterey to come down to see this. It was really quite a testament. I sat at the CTE Advisory Committee. There are some great volunteers in our community, some great business people. Several of those business people are also parents of our students. It was good. There were some stories about students that had started as interns or shadowing that have stayed and are working after school within the businesses. And there was also something that came up in my mind. A lot of it was students are driving themselves to these opportunities, and I think this may be something we need to look at or I need to pursue, which is Have we created another gap, maybe the achievement gap and the tech gap, and now do we have a CTE gap possibly where you only can participate if you have a vehicle? So that's something I'll have to talk to Liz more about. I had an opportunity to go to the Aggie Backers Morro Bay High School barn dance and dinner. That was wild. That was I kind of showed up in my sort of preppy clothes and, you know, felt way out of place. But I did get to talk to Peggy Flynn about the new work that she has been able to do to design the whole ag department over at Morro Bay. And then I was lucky enough to represent the school boards in the county at the California State School Boards Association Delegate Assembly. So great district that we're in.
Okay, Ellen.
I just want to I visited Pacheco last week for a boardwalk, and as usual, it was very informative and interesting, and kudos once again to Mr. Mayfield and the staff over there for all the fine work they're doing with our students.
I just wanted to thank the Morro Bay High School, the Morro Bay High and actually Los Osos Middle School Music Boosters. A bunch of us were there last night, and I talked to Dr. Pruitt. He said about 135 students are involved in the band program at Morro Bay High School. So that's about 15% of the total student body population, more if you consider that that the choir participation as well. So it probably runs to at least 20% of the student body population is involved in the music program there. And just kudos to the music boosters for all the work they do. Christmas tree sales, poinsettia sales, everything. They're really doing a great job. I did attend my first National School Board Association Board of Directors meeting in Atlantic City. And then we visited a place called Sayreville Public Schools, which was the public school home of the president of NSBA. It was a great visit, really fun. One thing I just want to point out is that really both CSBA and NSBA are really taking a strong stand on equity, and really we need to be looking at everything we're doing for kids through the lens of equity. Really important. Also, just a reminder that the proposed federal tax bill will have serious, very bad ramifications for schools, starting with then the consequences for the local and the loss of the local federal tax deductions. It's going to be really hard on states. It'll be hard on us. It'll be hard on states like New Jersey, where property taxes can run upwards of $15,000 for a home like you and I have. Graduate student education is probably going to be decimated. And then there's also the ability to create voucher accounts. And then, of course, there's student health. All these things are going on in Washington, D.C. right now, and so I would ask that you contact your congressmen, your senators, and ask them to please vote no on that bill to make modifications that don't hurt students. Is there anybody else? Seeing none, we'll adjourn this meeting. Thank you.